well in your beds.
Because if this thing comes true, there ain't gonna be any more.
It's an elevator. Somebody sent those dents up here to get us. Now, there's no controls inside, but there's maintenance overrides in there. I think I can get it to go down.
I was wrong. We were so wrong. We must leave.
Hello. Welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how... Well,
yeah, don't ask me about that.
Yeah, so how are you doing otherwise?
Doing well.
Good. How's Pickle, by the way?
Pickle is cute and rambunctious.
Very good. And in the state of New York?
This is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Good. Yeah, the Red Sox are in first place. I'm kind of happy. Yeah, absolutely. And the Yankees are in third place. Under 500.
And it's still April.
That's true. And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
I'm doing okay.
Very good. We also have another co-host, Abe, who's from Massachusetts, who will be joining us later tonight. However, he's at a writer's group meeting at the moment. But before we begin our episodes, we do have a few housecleaning things. First off, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Ascansity Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And Mike, you do a genre blog and a few other podcasts, as well as one that's about to start up.
Yeah, the blog is Unnatural Selections, unnaturalselections.com. The other podcasts are the spinoffs from Dark Discussions. The one that is about to return is it's Brothels and Bots, a Westworld podcast. The second season of that series starts on April 22nd, and we will probably be putting out the first Bullets, Brothels and Bots episode somewhere around the 24th, maybe the 25th, depends how quickly you edit. Then of
no
course
pressure.
No pressure. Just trying to state the facts. I don't want people like screaming on the 24th, "Where's my episode?" And then we've got the Game of Thrones podcast, which will be returning sometime in, I think, April of 2019, which is You Know Nothing, Jon Snow. And then Searching for American Gods, which is the American Gods podcast. We have no idea when that's returning.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, I just posted an article on the Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group where they spent $120 million on the last season of Game of Thrones. So a lot of money. A lot of money.
And if they don't make it back, they'll cancel the show. No, they can't do that. That's the problem with putting all that money on the final season. There's no fiscal responsibility after that.
It's true. So if we look at it, it would be $40 million for every 2 hours. So that's like a $40 million movie. And there's eight episodes. And though I heard some of them are going to be 2 hours anyway. But so that'll be interesting to see how that goes. A few folks, they all read the screenplays during readings, and I guess there were tears and crying based off of many character deaths, is what they said.
Well, but, of course.
Yes, but again, you never know.
News.
True.
No, I see. I don't have a hard time when you're in the last season. I have a hard time getting too choked up about a character death because you're never going to see them again anyway.
Right. Right.
It's not like, oh, shit, they killed Ned Stark, and I'm going to have to suffer, spoiler warning, and I'm going to have to suffer through six more seasons of this show without my favorite character. It's, oh, my God, they kill off Tyrion. I don't know. And I'm going to have to watch one more episode without him. You know,
they're all going to cry anyway because the show's over.
Yeah.
So, now,
did you guys hear that, I guess, Amazon is spending something like $1 billion on a Tolkien series?
Yes,
I did. Yeah. I heard this.
I did. I was admittedly not happy with it, with that. I just thought that was really lame.
I heard it includes a remake of The Lord of the Rings, too, the movies. Remakes of the books.
Hmm.
Which is kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Well, depends on where it airs. Because remember, there's
their money. They can do what they want with it.
It's their money. They can do what they want. And I want to, again, remind everyone that, you know, something goes back to the horror, et cetera, days was the 20-year rule. And that's actually coming up pretty closely. But 2001
right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what they were planning to do is what I heard yesterday from a buddy of mine who pulled it up on his phone. He said that it appears they're going to remake the Lord of the Rings books as a 20-episode television show or something like that. Or
yeah, something. I just have no interest in the whole thing.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting in a bad way, I guess.
Well, I mean, I'm curious, but if they think I'm going to... I mean, look, I don't think most of the Amazon shows have gotten great reviews. It depends on, I guess, obviously the individual show. But, you know, if you want me to invest in a 5-season Lord of the Rings TV series, you better be good out of the gate if you're going to get my eyeballs.
Now, Mike, speaking of Amazon, is that Castle, whatever show, still on?
Man in the High Castle had 2 seasons. I don't know if it's getting a third.
Okay. Did you continue watching it, or did you give up?
I have not gone back to watch the second season. It's something I keep trying to remind myself to go do, but there's always other stuff to watch. At some point, I will try to remember it. And part of the problem is, like, I'm in the habit of watching, when I want to watch a TV series, of going to Netflix or going to HBO. There are shows on Hulu that I want to watch, and I kind of keep forgetting to do that, like The Looming Tower, like Runaways. And what's that?
Handmaid's Tale.
And Handmaid's Tale. But I'm not in the habit of going to Hulu. So it's sort of like, you know, when a channel is on your cable box, if you remember back in the days when people had cable boxes, if it's not a channel you regularly would change the channel to, you would often forget to check to see what was on. And it's sort of the same thing. I'm just not in the habit of going on to the Amazon streaming service for TV shows.
Now, Mike, your opinion on the Solo trailer?
It's a Solo trailer. It's a Star Wars trailer. There's lots of effects. I still don't know what the story is. I'm still not sold on the guy playing Solo as Solo. And I don't have a problem with having a different actor playing Han Solo.
Not that guy.
I don't have a problem with that guy necessarily. And I know people who are like, oh, I wanted this actor, I wanted that actor. It's like, well, you didn't sit in the casting sessions. You know, you don't know what they want the guy to do.
A lot of times, they're similar to George Lucas, right? They pick unknowns, and like, Daisy, whatever her last
Ridley.
Name is. Ridley, she was an unknown. All the people that were in Star Wars were basically unknowns.
Right, and this is a guy, he was in the one of the last Coen Brothers movie. I can't remember what it was called now. It wasn't a particularly good film. He was one of the better parts of it. But it's really hard to play Harrison Ford, and he has to, you know, and I'll be happy I've said this, as long as he plays Han Solo and doesn't try to do Harrison Ford, just as Chris Pine did Captain Kirk without trying to do an impersonation of William Shatner. He's also a younger version of Han Solo, so I don't think you want to get the exact version of Han Solo that you have there. But it feels to me that when they make the two trailers, that there is not a lot of Han Solo in those two trailers. There's a little more in the second trailer than there was in the first, but it's still, and maybe this is me, feels like they're kind of editing around him. There's stories that they had to get an acting coach, and I don't know. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I'm going to go see it because it's Star Wars and I'm a sucker. But I am kind of surprised. Well, not surprised. I have no interest in all that would otherwise be very hyped to go see a Star Wars film.
Well, and here's the thing about the Star Wars franchise at this point. When, I'm getting all the names of the movies confused in my head. Not The Last Jedi, the one before that.
Force Awakens.
Force Awakens, thank you. When The Force Awakens came out, it had been a damn long time since we'd had a Star Wars movie. So right. That was really exciting, and everybody was all jazzed about it. And then we got that, and then we got Rogue One, and then we got The Last Jedi, and now we've had enough Star Wars. And well, one every year seems overkill to me. I don't think interest can be sustained at that pace.
Well, in fairness, Disney has managed to sustain interest with a Marvel movie every year.
Well, that's a good point.
And they are marketing not to. If I can jump in here for a minute, I just saw The Last Jedi like last week.
Okay.
And Nathan and I were talking about it, and we were kind of like, "Eh," and he was like, "Well, you know, we'll watch the others when they come on Netflix or whatever for free, you know, when they're on demand or whatever for free, or we'll rent it on Amazon for $4 or on Redbox or something." But we realized when we were talking that these Star Wars movies are not being, they're not really for us. Like, we grew up on the original three, the ones that I'm sold on, the ones that will always, that's right, what I belong to. And so you have generations of children now that were our age, they're our age now, that these new ones are coming out. And these are what those movies are being made for. These are who those movies are being made for. They're not really being made for us. You know what I mean? We had our time already with Star Wars. We got the best, if you ask me. But and I really think that that's why they're going to be successful, even if they're not, you know, fabulous and mind-blowing by our standards. Because they're not for us. They're for the little kids so they can go and sell stuff in the Disney parks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was just my two cents. Anybody can disagree with me.
I get your point. I'm just saying that I personally have no interest in going to see Solo. And this actually kind of pains me to say, but because it's a beloved childhood memory. Like, Luke Skywalker was the first hero I ever knew.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of done with Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not into it anymore. I've seen everything I want to see.
Right, and that's perfectly fair. I think Christy's right. It's aiming at a new generation. That's what these are for. These have always been kids' movies. And people who are in their 40s now complaining that they're not making, you know, Martin Scorsese's Star Wars, you know, they're not getting it. And I do think there's room in that universe to tell adult stories if they want to, but they're not going to make a $400 million epic out of it.
If Martin Scorsese had made Star Wars, Phil would have seen it when he was 10.
Yeah.
Paul Schrader better wrote the script.
A very high threshold when you talk about success for Star Wars. And, the original trilogy back then, and then with Force Awakens, sets a bar for what people think Star Wars movies need to be successful. And that's fine if you want to do one movie every 3 years or one trilogy every decade or two decades. You can't sustain that. And if you want to turn it into an ongoing franchise, then you have to redefine your expectations. Until Avengers and Black Panther, none of the Marvel movies made Star Wars money, but they all were successful. So if Disney is smart, you know, they understand that there will be some diminishing returns, they will still be insanely profitable as long as they keep the budgets within reason. But the problem is there's always going to be a temptation to want to push that boundary. And I've said all along, I would love it if Disney was willing to say to filmmakers, even if established filmmakers, if it could be, but we're willing to fund $10, $30 million Star Wars or $30 to $50 million Star Wars movies. Come pitch us your ideas. And let them do that with relatively few limits. In other words, like, obviously not, say, an NC-17 or a porno film, although those might make a bit of money, but you know, try doing different things, exploring yourself. They don't have to tie everything back into just that original trilogy. There's lots of room for that universe to be explored because it is literally a universe.
I get it.
Yeah.
So, I'm saying, for me personally, that original set of characters seems to have run their course, and that's what I was interested in.
Well, now that spoiler warning, they're all dead, either in real life or on screen. Yeah, those characters are gone. So,
not true. Solo's back.
Well, sort of. Yeah.
No.
I will be seeing this film though. This one I'm excited for because first off, it's Ron Howard, I like Ron Howard. But second of all, my little girl is going to go, 4-year-old, wants to see Chewbacca.
Okay, that's cool.
Chewbacca is awesome.
That's right.
Chewbacca is awesome. Can all agree on that.
I am with Eric, though. I have lost kind of an interest, so that's why we're seeing them, you know, whenever we can.
I agree with Eric. I've completely lost interest. The only reason I saw the last three in the theaters was simply for the fact that a buddy of mine wanted to go see him, and he bought tickets to open a night, and so I went.
They
didn't do anything for me when I saw them. Honestly.
Right, but to support my point too, you have a little one who wants to go see it to see Chewbacca. So now, start looking up to the heroines and the heroes. Exactly. So now this is her time,
and she's going to want a porg for Christmas.
Let me tell you something. I would like a porg. That was the only thing in that movie that really turned me on were the porgs.
The porg, what's that? That little animal,
the bird thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I would love to have him, and my kitties would love him too, I bet.
Your kitties would destroy him.
but all the other porgs would surround them and give sad eyes and the kitties.
Now, a couple of things. Scaricon, Mike, what's going on with that? Explain what's happening and doc discussions and all that.
Right now, you and I are slated to do Scaricon. Christy, I think, is planning on doing Scaricon. We don't know about Abe. Eric is not invited.
He's invited.
Being in Michigan is unlikely to make it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm invited but not coming.
So Scaricon New England is the weekend of, January, of June 15th, 16th, and 17th in
Framingham.
Framingham. Something like that. In Epping, Massachusetts. And we're going to be there, and Leo Pond of the Dorkening, who you and I have each done some episodes on, is apparently going to be doing some of the panels, and we are hoping to be participating in that.
Oh, it's 100%. We're participating in the panels.
Well, I just like to know what panels. I'm hoping to
hear more. It's still being churned out.
So,
yeah, because as some of the bigger guests are coming in, Dee Snider was just announced, and so on. Cassandra Peterson, as people know, but they're trying to figure out what type of panels to do with the stars. So me and Mike may actually be interviewing some of the stars as well as Chrissy or anybody who comes from Dark Discussions. But go on, Mike.
Yeah, that would be it. So the guests that have been announced, and we've mentioned a lot of them already, but you mentioned
Tom Savini. Peter.
Tom Savini, David Naughton from American Werewolf in London.
Amy Steele, did you say her?
Amy Steele, Dee Snider just announced. Danny Lloyd from The Shining is coming. He's a little bit older now. You may not recognize him.
Felicia Rose,
Ricky Logan, Jason Lively. Yeah, so you got a bunch of people coming. I mean, obviously, Elvira, Danny Lloyd, Doug Bradley, Dee Snider are going to be some of the big names. And I'm sure there's going to be more because they always have a good roster of guests, and we just hope this gives them the turnout.
Yes, absolutely.
Dee Snider, is that the Dee Snider of Twisted Sister?
It is.
That is the Dee Snider of Twisted Sister.
I just watched today, because somebody posted it on Facebook, the video of him testifying before Congress about the whole parents thing back in the day, and it was phenomenal. He freaking schooled those people. It was awesome.
The what thing back then?
The Al Gore's...
I can't remember the...
Tipper Gore.
Tipper Gore thing.
I'm putting name to it as well because he was married there. Yeah, so basically heavy metal music causes people to suicide and all this other stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
We all remember that.
Made them look like a-holes. It was awesome.
Oh, they are a-holes, though. So.
Yeah, but he proved it.
Right, the few doubters out there. Yes. So that'll be exciting. So me and Mike, we'll have a table there, and Chrissy will have a table there. So we'll someone will always be available during the roving around the convention hall. Also, as we stated, we're going to be doing panels and so forth. And everybody that wants to join us for lunch, dinner, breakfast, or drinks afterwards, or maybe even doing an episode of a podcast, because we're thinking of doing a live podcast there as we did in Mystic, you can possibly join us. So that would be kind of cool. Hopefully folks will come out and see us, as well as support what could be a good convention. There is a hotel rate discount for folks who want to stay over, and
pretty substantial. It's like $125 a night, or normally I think $175 or $190 a night.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah, see, I have to go there and put my code in, because I tried it and it wasn't giving it to me, so I guess I got to put the code in.
Yeah,
probably
put the code in. But basically, Framingham is a big tech area. A lot of high tech companies, headquarters of Staples and TJ Maxx, and so there's a lot of businesses. So the hotels in that area are usually expensive, but because we have a code, as Chrissy just mentioned, you get the hotel rooms for $125, as Mike said. So discount for all the people who come for Scaricon, and the hotel, you just go down the elevator and you're in the convention, because it's the hotel and the convention are the same place. And I just mentioned something about Mystic. Eric, what's going on in Mystic?
We're doing it again this year on the weekend of August 25th and August 26th. The co-hosts of Dark Discussions will be descending upon Mystic, Connecticut to probably go see a movie and do a podcast about it and probably have a meal or two. And we would love for people to come out and join us for any or all of those events. So that will be August 25th, 26th. We'd love to see you there.
Absolutely. So hopefully folks will come and join us. Hopefully a good horror film or genre film, throw a whatever science fiction film, will be at the theater. So we will be reviewing that film. If not, I guess we'll have to do a VOD.
We'll go to the aquarium and give a commentary track on the beluga whales.
They are pretty impressive, I must admit, Mike. I've been to that aquarium. Anybody who wants information about Scaricon or Mystic can email darkdiscussions@aol.com, and I will we'll respond, give you the details, and you guys can hook up. We'll probably meet Leo Pond as well from the Dorkening. He was supposed to join us last year, but he got ill because he lives in the greater Mystic area. So it should be a good time. Let's see, what else?
I have one more thing to mention.
Go ahead.
Kind of in the news category. Speaking of our Westworld podcast, which is going to be ramping up soon, recently the showrunners of Westworld were talking about how it's actually earlier in the week, they were talking about how they wanted to change spoiler culture. So they were thinking about posting a video on BuzzFeed. Reddit. They're talking about posting a video on Reddit to just lay out all the spoilers for season 2. So they would be out there and that the community could police itself as far as who wanted to know about the spoilers and who didn't. So everybody was freaking out about that. And then the next day, they posted a video on Reddit, and it was them Rickrolling everybody.
So it was like an April Fool's type thing.
It was a prank. Yes.
Right. The actress who plays Clementine and the actress who plays Dolores. Clementine was playing the piano and Dolores was singing, and they were singing.
Never gonna give you up or
never
something.
Gonna give you up. Yeah,
the Rickroll song.
Okay, so Angela, Sarah Fagan, and Evan Rachel Wood?
Yes.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I was very happy to see that Angela Sarafian was in the trailer because there was some question whether she would return, and sure enough, she is. I'm not sure about the Norwegian actress, the one that the blonde with the snake tattoo. I forgot her name. Bosell, I think, was the last name.
Armistice was the character's name.
Yeah, I'm not sure if she's returning, but we'll find out.
Well, she was the last thing in the season.
Yeah, well, and she was about to get shot down. And
that's true. That's true.
Yeah, so that's why I think
we'll find out.
Yes, we'll find out. So, but yeah, yeah. So go on, man.
And I just did do a rewatch. Really, so much better, kind of on a second time through, because you know
that's what Eric said. You texted me, Eric, and mentioned that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, rewatched today, and I personally find it more enjoyable. Because the whole thing about this that was insane season one, and hopefully will be a little less so as season two, is all that was, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? And going back through it, knowing what's going on, and just enjoying the quality of the storytelling and the production value of the series is quite enjoyable.
Right, and I might say, because something like Lost, which didn't know what it was doing, but Lost advertised its fact kind of from the first episode that it's sort of got a puzzle box nature to it, that it's right. A mystery series. Westworld really didn't do that. So you didn't realize you're watching a puzzle box series until, about 7 or 8 episodes in. And then you're like, unless, of course, you're one of the Reddit people.
And Red Bull people.
You're one of them, Phil. Shut up.
So now people are on the lookout for it, but it's so you're watching it with one mindset, not realizing it's a different type of series, that it is kind of a mystery series, and you didn't realize you were watching a mystery. And there is a line, where one of the characters is reading from Alice in Wonderland and steals the line from the Mad Hatter, or uses the line from the Mad Hatter, that something along the lines of nothing would be what it is and everything would be what it isn't. And again, if you keep that in mind while you watch the show, really there's so many things where it's revealed that nothing is what you expect it to be. And like everyone knew going into it that you had the Man in Black character, who everyone assumed was going to be the Yul Brynner character from the film. And right. So the very first inversion comes where in the first scene of the first episode you find out that the Man in Black is actually a human and not a robot. And the guy that you thought was a human was a robot, and that sets things over. But then there's several reversions with that character of who you think he is, what he think he's doing, and what he's trying to get throughout that 10-episode series. So you're never really sure who anyone is at any one point in time and what their role is. And you all think you know who the first robot to gain awareness would be, and I think we all ended up being kind of wrong on that one too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's going to be exciting. And again, follow us on Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, our Westworld podcast, which will come out around the 24th of April, as Mike said. Also, co-host Abe has just joined us. Abe, you do a genre blog by chance?
Yes, it's a movie reviewer. The best way to find it is go to Dr. Spencer's main page and look on your right-hand side. There'll be a link to my blog through there. I cover movies, games, and usually anything wonderful and awful on the internet. And there's other links there as well to other sites and friends of ours if you want to pay them a visit as well.
Yep, that's right. So go check darkdiscussions.com, and you can find all the episodes of all the podcasts, including Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast, there for free. And at the bottom of every page are links to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, our email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, and our Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Group. Eric, is there something else on the website?
Yes. Yes, there is, Phil. I'm glad you asked. There's a link on the front page that will take you to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that lets you financially support your online artists, such as podcasters. That's us. So you can click on that link, or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions and donate money on a monthly basis. To help us offset the cost of producing this podcast, including the cost of going to see movies, paying for server fees, upgrading hardware, et cetera, et cetera. All donations are appreciated. If you would like to support us, go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions, or you can find the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
And speaking of, well, we haven't spoken of it, but tomorrow is Friday the 13th. Which episode of the movies are you going to watch? Anybody? Anyone?
None, because my TV's still fucking broken. Okay, I got it on my system.
It sounds like you need a little de-Snyder yourself there.
How the fuck did you break your TV?
Abe,
you missed the whole thing.
Yeah, don't even ask.
Go hit my
Abe, please don't go there right now. Just don't, okay? Behave yourself. Oh, and I'm Chrissy, and I write short stories, and you can find out more about me at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com. That kind of got lost in the big discussion, so I thought I'd throw it in.
Yeah, I forget why that happened. We forgot that. Oh, well. Also, Chud.
All over the place.
The horror anthology is coming out, I believe, April 27th, which includes a short story by me. So it's based off of the movie, and it's... fiction in the world of Chud. And for those folks who are interested, the book is being was edited by Eric S. Brown and released by Crystal Lake Publishing. Friday the 13th reference right there. And the producer, director, and all the folks that were behind the film I'm fully supportive and behind the project, so go check that out. Bloody Disgusting and Dread Central have already been talking about it, so come out April 27th. Let's see, I think anything else that we have of note that anybody wanted to bring up?
I just want to throw one thing out there if I can. I've mentioned this, I think, on the podcast before, but there's a gentleman who's a friend of the podcast by the name of Jason Crawley, also known as The Bloke, who publishes a periodical of horror anthology, a comic book in the tradition of things like Eerie and Tales from the Crypt and so forth. And it's called The Bloke's Terrible Tomb of Terror. He's just come out with the fourth anthology, which collects like the most recent issues, and it's available on Amazon, or you can order directly for him for about $20. If you like that kind of storytelling, it's a good read. He writes all the stories as different artists doing the artwork. I know he's trying hard. He's got some personal issues that he's trying to deal with, and so he's kind of off the convention circuit right now as he recovers financially. You could help him out if you give it a try. So go look for The Bloke's Terrible Tomb of Terrors. You can order the physical copy again through Amazon or directly from him. Or if you use Comixology, which is a digital comics distributor, I'm pretty sure the issues are available there as well. So I wanted to kind of give him a shout out and
awesome covers
to check that.
Awesome covers.
Yes, yeah. Terrific covers. I've got a couple of them as posters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They definitely work. Being as posters. When you met him, was he selling them as posters?
Yes. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he was. Or he had prints. So nice, nice. So they're like the 11x17s.
Nice. Nice.
I met him originally at the first Scares of Care weekend.
Yeah. I think you interviewed him as well.
Yeah.
Abe, which Friday the 13th film are you watching tomorrow?
I guess I'll do the very first one because honestly, I like that one the best.
Yeah, me too. That was an awesome film. I love that one, too. It was the best. My favorite. Happy Friday the 13th for everybody, though this episode will probably come out a few days after that. Either way, everybody should be safe and good luck. I broke my arm on Friday the 13th, so there may be something to it.
Well, I'm going to write a script tomorrow night, so... I don't have to watch a Friday the 13th movie because that's horrifying enough. So that's where I'll be.
Where will you be again?
Writer's crew.
All right. On a Friday night. How about that? All right.
It's actually really fun. I look forward to it.
Very good. All right. So anything else anybody wanted to bring up?
I've actually been reading the novel version of the Ritual.
Oh, okay, the movie, yeah. How is it? It's about. I heard some of it is black rock and roll or something that has something to do with it. But go on.
I haven't gotten to that point yet, if that's true. Most of the earlier parts follow a lot very closely to the film, but the creature, for most of its design, actually has no human torso part, but actually just a huge, like, black maw of teeth. It's actually a lot more brutal, too, than the film. It actually goes into the characters a lot more in terms of their backstories and develops them more. Like, the character Phil from the film, who's kind of just in the background most of the time, actually is a little more fleshed out. And it definitely explores the setting a lot more as well. Kind of, like, gives you an idea of the history of the place. And it's a fast read. I'm, like, on page 160 already. And it's fantastic. Definitely get, if you enjoyed the film, I definitely think you guys will enjoy the novel as well. So, check it out.
Nice. Very good. Very good. Eric, I know you're a big reader. Is that one of the books that is on your agenda?
I started it. I'm being a bad reader right now because I'm juggling like five different books. So I'm not making particularly good progress on any of them. I got to choose one and go with it.
Gotcha. All right, very good. The last thing I'll say is Far Cry 5. Yes.
No, I was just going to say I found a little Far Cry 5 thing on Amazon Prime. It was like a little half-hour movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that, too.
That gives you the whole setup for it. It was kind of cool.
Yeah. It was one of their marketing tools they released a few weeks before the video game. And you can actually find it on YouTube as well. It is actually pretty good. Basically, the game takes place in Montana, a valley that's remote, where this cult religious kook, non-Christian guy takes over. And you are a U.S. Marshal that went in with a team to arrest him. The helicopter crashes, and you're stuck in the valley against these kooks. And you have to unite and join up with locals who will help you. And so far, the game is awesome. One of our listeners, Gage Fultz, is playing it, and he's like pumping up big time on Facebook, and rightfully so. It's a great game.
I heard it's actually a little more humorous at times than the previous ones.
Only some of the side adventures, they're very rare. I mean, it's only an occasional side adventure that is kind of humorous. Generally, though, it's pretty straight throughout. So that would be, in my opinion, a misnomer.
Okay, I just heard it was some silly omissions.
There's a couple that are silly, yeah. They're tongue-in-cheek, but almost 95% are serious. So.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a great series. There's 3, 4, and 5, the ones that I've played, and they're awesome. Check out that little movie that Eric said. So just search for Far Cry 5 movie on Amazon Prime or YouTube, and it'll pop up. They actually did that for Far Cry 3 and 4, too. And Far Cry 3 actually starred the kid from Superbad, or he was one of the guys.
In it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the guy that played McLovin.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Plaz or something. Something Plaz. Yeah. But all right, so I think that's it. So I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So, Eric, what are you letting everybody know with us tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about the new film currently in theaters, directed by and starring John Krasinski.
Written, too, by him.
Sorry?
It's written by him, too.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Co-written by him.
Yeah. And in honor of...
What's the name of the film?
Oh, did I forget to say the name of the film? It's called A Quiet Place.
They'll hear you, guy.
Now,
In honor of tonight's film, the rest of the podcast will be done in sign language.
Yep. They're fighting a massive invasion. Total devastation.
Quiet Place, that's right, 2018 film, brand new. It played at South by Southwest before it was released. As Eric said, directed by John Krasinski, 9 seasons on The Office. He co-stars in the film with Emily Blunt, who is actually his wife in real life and mother of his children. Film is... produced by Platinum Dunes, which horrified a few people prior to its release. It's distributed by Paramount, and it's a 95-minute film, budget of $17 million, and it's already at $90 million profit. Won the week, last week, over $50 million in North American theatergoers. And it has a 96% Rotten Tomato review at the moment. Michael Bay obviously produced it because it, or one of the producers because of Platinum Dunes. That's pretty much it. We should mention the music by Marco Beltrami because it does play a pretty important part in the movie. So I think that's pretty much all I got. So I guess we can do a roundtable of how we heard about this film and what we thought about this film. So Chrissy, why don't you start?
Well, for the record, I just want to say first off that there's been a lot of jabbering on the internet in the last couple days about the eating of popcorn and how it's ruining the movie. And I just wanted to state that, yes, I could hear noise around me in the theater, but nothing that a normal person couldn't tune out. So if anybody is on the fence about going to see this because you're freaked out about going to eat your popcorn, they're making more out of this than it really is. So just
don't eat anything during this movie. I'll stab you.
I'm sorry, but a normal person
clickbait. That's what I thought.
Yeah, it was clickbait. I mean, and I don't even know how true it is. I think somebody might have made it up. I mean, the audience I was with was incredibly respectful.
That's true. Mine was too.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like, oh my God, somebody bit into a piece of popcorn and people were like, rah! You know, I mean, it wasn't. It was fine. You're with 30, 40, 50, maybe 100 people. You're not going to expect everybody to be that quiet.
I didn't even notice any of it.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, it's funny because that was one of the first things I did was I was like, oh, shit, I better like, not move. Like, I felt – but I do have a comment about that later, actually. At the end of this, my nerves were absolutely shot. The first word I'd use to describe this movie is solid. Just about every movie I've seen so far this year has disappointed me in one way or another. You know, and in the last few years, we've watched a lot of movies for this podcast, and some of them have just been really disappointing or just, gee, that would have been good if the story hadn't been so crummy. I was kind of expecting that when I went into this. Now, this has been on my list since late last year when I first heard rumors about it circulating. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So when we did our 2010 episode, I totally put this on my list as one of my number one things I wanted to see because the trailer I had seen had made it look really awesome. And the trailer is also awesome because you don't get the whole story. You get all the tantalizing tidbits of the story that make you want to come and see it. And so the movie was every bit as good as the trailer. For once in the horror movie community, the movie actually lived up to the trailer.
I think the trailer, I think the film turned out to be even better than what the trailer promised, in my opinion.
All right, well, yeah, you can talk about it when you get to it.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would give you that, Abe. Absolutely. And so I was expecting, just something. Like, I was expecting it to fall apart or there to be a weak link. And not only did that not happen, this moved me this movie made me go, wow. Like, that has not happened to me in a very long time. Like, there's that last shot of whatever, which we'll do after spoilers, and I just went, wow. Like, I think I said it aloud. I was blown away by it. And I think this had it all. It had a solid atmosphere, a beautifully rendered atmosphere, fantastic acting, effective creatures. The tension in this was superlative. I mean, it felt like I was in the hands of a master. But also, where this movie excelled for me was the story. And I can talk more about where it actually excels, but I will say that the one thing that this made me realize is that because we've seen a lot of horror movies and I've read a lot of horror short stories that are, you know, relatively new and novels or try to, and I'm blown away by the fact that this movie is what all of those people should be striving to do. This is what you should be striving to create, something that leaves an indelible impression, something that you experience along with the characters in the film. And then I thought, you know what? I know why horror movies and books and stories get essentially crapped on by everybody, because the horror community is always whining about that. And it's because none of them knows how to do this. This movie paid attention to craft. This was a good movie. This was an effective blend of horror and literary storytelling that worked. And when the horror community can figure out how to do that every single time, then they will stop getting crapped on and called a bunch of hacks.
And well, I would say
I got to be very careful about what
here.
I go and see after this.
I have to interject here. A novel versus a movie, though both could be horror, are different in a sense. So I don't know if horror as a literary source is whether that's hack or not, which you could probably be right. There's a lot of writing, as we know, that that's why I read techno thrillers more than horror. But movies are a little different. I think.
But I'm saying in general as a genre, if every movie lived up to this high of a standard, if every novel lived up to, I don't know what the best horror novel would be considered, but whatever that fine standard is, it just made me realize when I came out of this, I realized what a bunch of absolute crap I had been watching for the last year and a half. It really changed me. I'm going to be a lot more careful now about what I go see, even more so. Because, you know, this movie, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about, is it worth your money to go see a movie that was shot in an iPhone? The reality is, if the movie that had been shot in an iPhone had been as awesome as this one, who would have cared what the hell it was shot on? It could have been shot on toilet paper. That was my point. And right. I think all movies...
One ply or two?
Lemon-scented?
Yeah, and lemons. I prefer two, and I prefer floral scented because my husband and my poops should not smell.
Anything else, Chrissy?
No.
Okay, let's go to you, Abe.
This was among one of the films I was really looking forward to, you know, seeing. When I saw the trailer, I was hooked, and I apologize to Chrissy for interrupting what she's saying, but I really think the trailer did not completely do the film justice, because in my opinion, after I've seen this movie, I thought the film blew away my expectations because it was a lot better than what I expected. I expected something good, but I didn't expect anything like what I just walked out of the theater after watching. This movie was a film that affected me in numerous ways. First off, it's been a long time since I watched a movie that has made me this, you know, like on the edge of my seat. This, hold my breath, feel my heartbeat. Feeling my adrenaline, you know, going overdrive. It was, you know, some they know how to use tension effectively. The people who put the film together knew how to make every scene feel intense, even with moments where the characters are just talking or even having a meal. They know how to create that. They know how to utilize the element of sound to just build the world. And the creatures. You know, I thought they were pretty cool in design, And they worked effectively to drive, you know, the story along as well. The characters were very, you know, very relatable and very likable. I from the opening scene, I had no idea how the film was going to end. So I was actually, you know, because it made clear, in my opinion, that it's a very possibility that Noah was safe in this film. So that was, that, I think, really heightened my, you know, my, the tension of each scene. The music was well handled. There were scenes that were very emotional. I mean, there were some movies that just hit me really hard. And that's the thing, for a long time, that a lot of films don't seem to do very well is knowing how to drive emotion in the right way. Sometimes it's overly heavy-handed, or it sometimes it doesn't feel like it can trust the scene to display that emotion. But this movie did that. I really love this movie. You know, I definitely agree with Christy. If more films could be made like this, I think the horror genre could become more of a force to be reckoned with within the film industry. Overall, I love this film. This definitely is going to be my top 10, if not the top film for 2018. In the words of Phil, this is the film.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I heard about this film because of Emily Blunt. She's my favorite actress after Sophie Turner, so I always follow what is coming out with her starring in it. From all her roles in genre films, from Looper to Edge of Tomorrow to Windchill to various other films of note, including Sicario and obviously this film here. I've loved her for ever. I've loved her since 2004 with her debut film, which is when I was watching drama films. I had picked up The Summer of Love on disc that year with All Unknowns, and I immediately knew she was going to be a star, and it does not surprise me that she still is. For this film here, I don't necessarily agree with Chrissy, because I did see a lot of great films last year, including It Comes at Night and Get Out and all these other films. So is this film put all those films to shame is a question, I guess, for debate, but I wouldn't necessarily agree with Chrissy on that. However, this film is one of the best horror films I've ever seen. It is easily a classic, in my opinion. It will be remembered for a long time, from the first beat of the film to the very last beat of the film. My feelings are similar to Chrissy and Abe, which is there's no time to breathe at all. So once something horrible ends and we're thinking we're going to have a break and a breath, we don't. And another horrible thing begins. And so you're at the edge of your seat the entire time of the film, and that is what people look for in a horror film, and it does it in spades. I will state that I don't necessarily agree with Chrissy when she said it's the screenplay, because the screenplay is very vague in everything it does. I think the thing that makes this film awesome is the set pieces, the acting of all the people involved, including the children, plus our lead actors in the film, and also the ambient music to continue where it is quote-unquote quiet. So I think it's much more than just the screenplay that makes this film great, and probably, in my opinion, is more important than the screenplay. All in all, this is a high recommend. I am with Abe. I don't see what film will be able to top this genre film as anything better in 2018, though I am more hopeful than I guess some of my co-hosts, because I believe there will be plenty of good horror films throughout, but I don't think anything's going to beat this. This is one of the best horror films I've seen ever. Eric?
Yeah, well, I first heard about this during our look forward to 2018, and I was trying to resist the hype because I hate getting all hyped up for a film and then possibly getting disappointed, so I just kind of tuned out, was trying to ignore all the hype about it, even though Phil was trying to cram it down my throat. and upon seeing it, it is one of the best horror movies I've ever seen that's well made in every aspect, particularly the sound design, and it's just, it's masterful. Like, Chris was talking earlier about the popcorn, and it's a kind of a silly thing, but literally, I mean, I've talked about this before. I can't stand having other people near me in the movie theater, and when I went to see this, it was a fairly full theater, and there were people right next to me. But the people that made this movie, the first 5 minutes of this movie are absolutely silent. And nobody, I mean, usually the first 10, 15 minutes of the movie, you hear everybody eating, you hear all the crinkling of the wrappers, and you hear all the chewing. But
only you do, Eric.
There was...
He's not, quite a people person.
But there was none of that. Absolutely silent in the theater for the first 5 minutes of this movie, and it's because of how they made it. And in that first 5 minutes, somebody almost knocks something over, and you nearly crap yourself, and they haven't even told you why yet. So it's just really well made on all levels. I have read some people nitpicking at it a little bit. It can be done. There are flaws you can pick at if you really want to, but why would you want to when the movie is so damn good? It is currently my favorite movie of the year, and I'd be surprised if it gets knocked out of that spot.
Yeah, the one thing quick before we go on to Mike, Eric, what I kind of wanted to say was this is probably, not that there aren't other good horror movies out there, but this is the first one I've ever seen that has managed to suck its audience in to the point where you are afraid to make a noise while you're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually with Absolutely, those people yes. in yeah. the movie.
But and I maybe, think this is because it's an exception more than rule, right? Because this is I think we would agree, Chrissy, as well, is probably one of the best horror films you've ever seen, ever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's an exception.
Let Mike give his thoughts.
Let's let Mike, I just wanted to, sorry, I'll shut up.
Mike.
All right, well, first of all, Phil, I think we all know the answer to your question is that there will be a better horror film coming out, and that is, of course, The Meg.
Yes.
I mean, Jesus, Jason Statham and a 60-foot-long great white shark. That's got A Quiet Place Peter all over that.
Especially since the book was awesome.
And Chrissy, I got to say that, yeah, there's a lot of crap, and they say 90% of everything is crap. Some people have no talent, but most people aren't trying to produce crap. I think I'm a big, believer in natural selection, and the only way you get something like this is through all that crap. That if people set out to make a masterpiece every time, we wouldn't get a whole lot, because you would end up getting a whole lot of pretentious douchebaggery that's overproduced, and mm-hmm. you'd get two films a year, and the best way to get great films is what we have now in the environment, which is the Blumhouse model, which is throw a whole bunch of films out there, and you're going to get your Ouija's and your Gallows on the low end, and you're going to get a lot of entertaining stuff in between, but you're going to strike gold in places that nobody would expect. Nobody in their right mind would have said, hey, let's get that guy from The Office to make a horror movie mm-hmm. with Emily Blunt, with nothing that anyone's ever seen before, and no marketable names, not an easy... Nobody would have expected this to be a good film. Not necessarily a good film, but the film that you're going to... Okay, we've got to pick and choose.
A classic,
right.
Yeah.
So this would never have passed muster. It sounds like I liked the film. I don't know that I liked it as much as everybody else here, because I still probably preferred The Ritual personally. But I think what works is that this is a film with a smart gimmick, right? It's it has a brilliant ad campaign, much like we talked about, it had one last year, and that's got people into the theaters. It's a very simple concept, and it worked. This was one of the best trailers. I remember when I first saw it, if it was on the Super Bowl, if it was before that, it's when I first saw the commercial for this, or the ad for it. But it hooks you instantly. This is a perfect example of the kind of thing that I think will be hard to replicate on the home experience. Because, you do have that whole everyone be quiet. When I was in the theater, and I was in the local cheap theater, we had a bunch of kids sitting in the back couple of rows. It was a group of friends, and these were all dumbass teenagers. And I just remember hearing them arguing before the film was starting as to which of their lazy asses was going to be the one to actually get up and go get the snacks. I was like, oh, fuck, you know, these guys are going to be a problem. And they were, like, a little bit at the beginning of the film, but they had, you know, you wouldn't have heard, you wouldn't have known they were there for the rest of the movie. I was kind of self-conscious about eating my popcorn because you could hear it. I normally don't pay attention to the sound of my popcorn being crunched while I'm eating it, but it's hard not to do it here. So I'm wondering if when people are saying, well, it's shaming people, I wonder if it's just your own self-acknowledgement. Bigger problem I had is, since it's the local cheap theater, is that I could also hear the two movies next door to this one really, really well.
Oh, wow.
Because this film is quiet. And that's one thing I really liked, is that they sustained the gimmick throughout the entire film, right? That this was not a few moments here and there of where you have to be completely silent. You know, that they carry it through from beginning to end for the most part. And this is also something I've always said about, or like not always, but long said about horror films, is that rules really help. And I think of a movie like Jaws or Gremlins or Tremors. When you say something like, don't feed them after midnight, or don't go in the water, or don't make a sound, or what was the one from a couple of years ago? Lights Out, right? Where you can't have darkness. Then you build up tension because you're waiting for that rule to be broken because you know it's going to be broken. And so it's that dread, that anticipation of when is that noise going to come? When is somebody going to, or something falls into the water or whatever it may be. And this is a really good experiment on how to do that. I'm completely with Eric. You can nitpick the hell out of this if you want. And I saw a number of people trying to do that, but it's like, dude, there's really nothing in this film to nitpick that is not true of like every zombie apocalypse film ever made. You know, there is no way, I think, that you get into this world that they've made up in a logical way. I think any attempt to do a prequel to this would be stupid. Because I don't see how, with all the various weapons and stuff we have, that these things would ever get to this situation. But who the fuck cares, right? It's a great concept. You buy the concept. You buy the film. If you can't get on board with this concept, don't go see the movie. You're missing the fun of this, right? And just like, you know, if you can't buy the idea that a character is going to spontaneously break out in song, then don't ever go see a musical, right? So same thing, if you can't buy the monster concept here of the world is taken over by monsters that hunt by sound and everyone has to be quiet for the rest of their lives, there's no point in making this film. In saying the film.
Well, and just to point out one thing, actually, since Mike, you were talking about the gimmick of no sound, and Phil, you were mentioning the screenplay, I did some research on this, and this was painstakingly put together. Every noise, every single little thing you see, like things like the beach sand that they walk on that they put down so they don't make sound, the atmosphere, the whole thing, I mean, every single detail was painfully paid attention to here, to the point where there were almost no egos in this film. It sounds like everyone who worked on this film, if they made a suggestion and it wasn't going to be for the overall good of the film, they said, well, screw it then, cut it. They had mountains of flashbacks that they had written into the original script. I don't think they even filmed them because they kept reading the screenplay and reading the screenplay and going, something's wrong with this, something's wrong with this. They cut it all out. And that's how the first scene got to be the scene that we see. That was supposed to be a flashback. And it was somebody's idea to go, why the hell are we showing this in a flashback? We need to keep it in the present and move it forward. And that's why I was talking about the screenplay being so architectural. Phil is referring to the setting being great and all of this other things being great, which is all true. But that was actually written into the screenplay because there was so little dialogue that the screenplay was all drawings and maps and shit.
Right.
And pictures. That's what it was. That's what they had to work with.
For me, the number one thing about this movie was actually the sound design. Because in addition to the music that Phil was mentioning, There's also just, I mean, the quiet is extremely effective when they have to be quiet.
Yeah.
But there's also one of the characters in the movie is deaf, and the way he muted all ambient noise whenever we shift to her point of view, I think was absolutely brilliant. And one of the things that makes this movie so good.
Yeah.
Well, and that was what he... I read an article about that, too, that he created different, what he called sound envelopes for each character because he wanted the audience to be able to step into whoever's perspective we were in. So, I mean, this... I just got the impression that this was really heavily worked on. This wasn't just somebody who, you know, wrote a screenplay and threw it out there or wrote a screen. And we, let's face it, we all know, we've heard stories of movies where they just, you know, the screenplay is a disaster, so they just did it anyway, or they, you know, they threw a patch on it. I really got
Or they just didn't finish filming the screenplay.
Like Snowman, right? But this, it sounds like they didn't even do a damn thing before they knew they had something that was super duper tight and almost perfect. And I think that shows in the final product.
And, you know, that's very similar to, you know, how when it comes down to writing a novel or something, you know, doing a piece of animation or something like that. It takes, you're not going to get on the first go. And sometimes you'll have to rework things. And sometimes you'll find a piece that you might have to rearrange or something that, you know, you didn't realize you had in the first place that you can expand on. And I think the runtime really helps that as well. I think it because it's so tightly wound in terms of how the story flows, it works much better. If it was any longer, I think it might have actually kind of bogged things down.
Oh, I agree. I agree with that. I think less is more. And also, they didn't have a budget for the score. Phil, I agree with you. The score is amazing. And the guy who did the score, I forget his name at the moment, but Phil, you had brought him up. You know, he did a lot of big movies. He did Scream. He did the whole Scream series, I think. He did Snowpiercer. He's done a lot of horror and science fiction and action films that are pretty, you know, well-known, like not little stuff, big stuff. And he said that there was no budget. There was, like, hardly any budget for a score. And as it turned out, he was really glad because this worked out better. And the whole premise of this movie was less is more. And, Mike, did you know that they filmed this in Little Falls and then they filmed the rest of it a bit in Meekin, New York? That's about an hour from my house, not even.
Yeah, about the same for me. By the way, let me say also this. My wife is hearing impaired. After 30 years of playing tuba and then having her play that in a basement without soundproofing. So she actually never realized this. They just did some renovations to that cheap theater with the thin walls. And she saw, and she was paying attention to the renovations, saw the sign that they had closed captioning devices and she had never used it. So ironically, her first time using a closed captioning device for a movie was for this film. which oddly enough, she said was really helpful because there were moments like when you hear the high pitched whine, she didn't hear it.
Oh,
and
okay.
So, but it you know it had it pop up on the little device, and it's done in a way.
Now, is it like glasses that she wears and it pops
no,
up?
No, it's. It's almost like a thing off one of the viewers from the original Star Trek. You put it in your cup holder next to you, and then it's like a little view thing, and you look at it. You don't have to like put your face next to it.
So like a little LCD screen?
Yeah, like a little LCD, but it's recessed so people around you can't see it.
Okay.
And so it's kind of so it. Anyway, so she said she's never going to see a film without it, but it did help her. But I thought one of the neat things is that one of the things I liked about it is that the girl they had playing the deaf girl is in fact a deaf actress, and I like that simply because you know the Hollywood tendency is well we'll just hire Charlize Theron and put her in makeup so people think she's deaf. You know they do that all the time, like hiring ugly people or pretty people to play ugly people or put somebody in a fat suit or you know. CGI out your arm if you need to be an amputee rather than hire actors out there who really could use the work who are in some way impaired. And so I appreciate that. And it's not, I'm not saying that just because my wife is hearing impaired. I'm saying that because this has been a thing I think was idiotic all along. There's always people like this looking for work. And I think it worked really well.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, but first, let me comment on what you just said, Mike. Yeah, I mean, as we know, all the time they hire these gorgeous people to play ugly people, and at least in this case, for a deaf person, they actually use someone that is hearing impaired to play the role. Another thing I wanted to bring up about this film too is that John Krasinski and Emily Blunt and the budget of $17 million for this film compared to, say, Mother, which was Darren Aronofsky's Jennifer Lawrence's film from last year. That film was $30 million. This one was only $17 million. And obviously both decided to take discounts and salary to get this done. And I think that is another thing that should be noted, because, I mean, Emily Blunt could have easily said, I want $15 million for the film. And right there, that would have been almost all the budget. And she didn't.
Do you know the story of how she got involved?
Well, she's the wife of Krasinski.
Yeah, and he had already found somebody to play the part, and the script was sitting around the house, and she read it, and she was like, you've got to fire that actress. I want to play this part.
Oh, there you go. That is so awesome.
Nepotism!
But I don't know who that other actress was, but, I mean, she's a huge name herself. So
it was Sophie Turner.
Apparently, it was somebody that's actually a friend of hers.
Oh, okay. That's too funny. So she obviously took a huge discount to this film, obviously, because her husband's doing it. And he was doing it, obviously, for more than just to make an awesome film. I mean, he did it because of the art and all this other stuff. He knew this was a good story and so forth. And so, as a result... he was a jack of all trades to the film. He did four things to the film: produced, directed, co-wrote, acted, and whatnot. And, well, actually, I'm sorry, he didn't produce. But my point is that he obviously took a pay cut as well, and as a result, they were able to get a great film done that is profitable compared to Mother, which some people will say is a great film, some will not, which was a complete flop because of people refusing to take pay cuts for what turned out to be a vanity project. And in some cases, when I heard about this film originally, I thought it was a vanity project because I had no idea who Krasinski is. I'd never seen the show. So I just assumed it was some indie director that was directing, writing, and starring. And he just lucked into getting Emily Blunt involved. And because I didn't even know he was married to her until last week when my wife mentioned, oh, I saw her on Entertainment Tonight that they're married or whatever. So this is an example of how a film should be made versus Mother, which is an example of a film, or Annihilation, for example, that's another one, that are films that, even if they're good, are examples of films that aren't made correctly, at least in my opinion.
Go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, I just wanted to specify, when you say correctly, you mean in a manner in which they can achieve profitability.
And be good in the same, too, right?
Okay.
I get what Phil is saying. And where passion and craft comes before, you know, we're
ego.
Just going to spend ego. And yes, exactly. And that's the difference. Whereas, you know, Hollywood will right now go, oh, God, January, February, great time for horror movies. Let's just throw some piece of shit out there that doesn't hold together because it's going to make money because it's January.
The Forest.
Instead of saying, exactly, I love The Forest, but it's not really a great movie, I'll give you that. I happen to love it for other reasons. But they'll do that instead of something like this, which clearly was made for the joy of making it. I'm sure these people were not sure, just like any movie maker or filmmaker, if this was going to be a flop or a hit. They had no idea. They don't know. They don't have a crystal ball. And they chose to pour everything into it and make sure that it was as perfect as they could possibly make it. And so I understand totally what Phil's saying. It's the way things should be done instead of the way they are now. You know, like Get Out, like we all saw Get Out. Some of us liked it more than others. But the reality is Get Out was an excellent film where, once again, you could tell that they paid attention to what they were doing it when they were making it. They did it out of love. They didn't do it out of, let's just make $1 million because it's February and horror movies make money, you know?
Yeah. And another, yeah. Another thing that this film does really well is something that I feel that a lot of some horror movies are lacking is the humanity element. These characters felt very real and, you know, very relatable. Yeah. And because of that, especially with how well executed the opening scene was, you understand how they're feeling. You're able to step into the shoes of each one of them. And because, as I mentioned earlier, how the opening scene is executed, you have no idea what's going to happen to any of these characters. There's no, like, anyone who's safe.
Well, and that's a great point, Abe, and something I was going to bring up is that one of the things they do so well is setting those stakes right at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Within the first 5 minutes of the movie, they tell you, this is what's going on. People could die at any given moment. We're not screwing around.
Yeah. And the way that the creatures attack and how quickly a character can be removed from the stage is so fast and so visceral in a way that it lessens more, but you feel the weight of that, you know.
All right, we're creeping in on plot points. I feel the need to throw up a spoiler flag.
Oh, yeah.
Hold it. What's the wiki, Eric?
Wiki. All right, I'm on the wrong tab of my browser. All right.
You had one job, Eric.
No, he had the pawn up.
I have multiple jobs, thank you very much. a family is forced to live in silence while hiding from creatures that hunt by sound.
That's a bad wiki because it doesn't say it's post-apocalyptic necessarily, but technically it's correct. Everything else. So, okay, that's a fair.
So, in that, I also want to say, Eric, you were just. Or was it Abe that just said about, you know, it effectively... Who was the last person that... Because I was going to dovetail on that, and I can't remember what it was.
It doesn't matter. Just dovetail. Yeah.
Okay. The thing is, one of the things that's done well, too, is, again, you get the entire backstory in tiny little details in that opening. You see a piece of newspaper. When they come out of the store, they're all in silence. Now, if you haven't seen the trailers, then you don't know why. If you have, then you have an idea. But still, you come out of the store, and there's a newspaper laying there that says with a big headline, "It's sound."
Right.
So you know that that's, you know, you're told that. You're also, you look up, there's a quick shot of above Main Street, and you see some scavenger birds. We don't know if they're vultures, we don't know if they're buzzards, but they're scavenger birds. And you say, okay, that means there's dead bodies around, there's carrion around. So you know there's a lot of people that are dead. Even though the place is abandoned and all of that, it tells you that there is fresh kill around.
Well, and here's the other thing that I still don't know how they accomplished this, because while they're still in the store, obviously everybody is being silent and walking around being silent, but there's a point where a little boy knocks a toy off the shelf. And everybody in the theater went,
and
I don't know how that works because they haven't told us what we're supposed to be afraid of yet.
Because we've all seen the trailers,
I guess. But I thought that was really well done.
Well, no, it's because in that opening sequence, it is by the way that she handles the pill bottles.
You know
it's a fucking bad scene.
But honestly, Eric, if just knowing that it was a post-apocalyptic world at this within 2 minutes or so, or at least you figure it is, I've saw enough zombie films that obviously you can speak in zombie films usually, but you don't want to make noise because the zombies are attracted to noise too. So I think a lot of folks were going in and they're all familiar with zombie films and noise that I think they could relate to this, even if we didn't know the threat yet.
No, I know. I'm just pointing out how quickly they get you hooked in.
Yeah.
It literally was really, really minutes. Fast.
Well, yeah. and the opening first 5 minutes displays just how dangerous it is to make a sound, because with zombies, you could just, you know, they come, because depending on how they're handled, they're usually very easy to get away from. But with these things, you make a fucking noise, you're done.
Well, we didn't even know that yet, though, Abe.
But I think the first 5 minutes.
Once you see the boy is killed, you realize what they're up against, and you're like, oh my God.
I was fucking gobsmacked when they pulled that out in the first 5 minutes of the movie. I was like, holy shit, they just killed a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
On screen.
Everybody in the theater, in my audience, jumped. I saw it. Some guy 2 rows in front of me jumped, his popcorn went flying. Like, it was terrifying. Nobody was ready for that. Awesome.
Now, I wrote this in my review on Cinema Night Fight, and I've mentioned it last night to a couple of my friends when I was talking about the film. The Conjuring got a R-rated for intense sequences because there was no violence, no blood, no profanity, and no nudity. If you look at the R next to it, it says for intense sequences. Yet this film gets a PG, and in my opinion, this film is by far more intense horror sequences
than anything that
we saw in The Conjuring. I don't know where the MPAA in the United States pulls their shit out of their ass or whatever. Because
have you ever, though?
No, I haven't, because this film should have been an R film over The Conjuring, because The Conjuring, I wouldn't have as much issues for my kid to watch, but my 4-year-old watching this film, that ain't going to happen for a few years.
But again, really, who gives a shit about the rating? I mean, it's a good film. It's just a scary film.
Oh, no, but this is just, you're right, I'm not talking about the film in general, I'm just...
Another
interesting topic that's related to the film.
Right. Yeah. All you need is one F-bomb or to change it, and otherwise the films could be identical. It's sometimes really minor stuff. Yeah, now, the fact that you had a violent death to a 4-year-old, that's off-screen, but obviously happening, that does make it a little bit of a surprise that they didn't irrationally make it an R film. But I think a PG-13 is perfectly fine. I think a 12 or 13-year-old should handle this film with no problem. A 7-year-old might. And at the very least, for Christ's sake, keep 7-year-old out of this theater, because that I can't imagine.
Well, right. So it's more, my issue, I guess, was why The Conjuring was an R. The two Conjuring films are R's, while this one is a PG-13, when The Conjuring films probably should have been PG-13 then.
I'm old enough to see everything, so I don't care.
right, I guess. But for folks who haven't seen this film but have maybe seen The Conjuring, this film puts The Conjuring in other words, it's way more scary than The Conjuring was, in my opinion.
It choke slams The Conjuring.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, that's what I think I was really honest online with somebody when I said, listen, this is my number one movie of the year. It is going to take something, I don't even know what the hell is going to be good enough to top this. I really don't.
A 60-foot-long great white shark.
I don't know, dude. I read that book. I tried to read that book. I am not expecting high art with that. I'm just going to go and have fun. I'm going to eat my popcorn and watch the damn shark, but I highly doubt quality-wise it's going to be as good as that.
So, back to A Quiet Place. I have to say that I did not put two and two together as far as recognizing who John Krasinski is, because I watched The Office. I know who Jim is. I didn't recognize him with a beard. And his name didn't click when I saw it in print. So,
I didn't either, yeah.
So, like...
Well, plus you probably wouldn't expect him as in a horror film either, right?
Well, no, absolutely not. Yeah. So I, of course, avoided all reviews until after I saw the movie, when I started reading reviews. And, of course, every single one of them mentions that he was Jim in The Office. I was like, holy shit! I never would have guessed that dude is capable of making a movie like this, but good on you, John.
On a side note, he's from Newton, Massachusetts, by the way.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Well, us New Englanders care. I mean, come on.
No, I actually don't care, Phil, because I think Massachusetts is a dump, but yeah.
Well, I will.
I had to get your goat by saying that to see what you would do.
Well, I moved out of the state, so believe me, I'm not too worried about it.
Believe me, I live in Connecticut. Connecticut is a dump.
So, Actually, I was very disappointed. I was actually very happy to find out this was not filmed in Canada, like everything is. And I was very disappointed that it wasn't filmed in New England. But what are you going to do? Because I thought it was New England. I thought it was like New Hampshire until I went and read the wiki after the film and saw that it was the New York area.
I recognized that main street that they were filming on, and I'm like, where have I seen that before? My family had a cabin near Little Falls, so we used to shop in downtown Little Falls. Yes. And Little Falls had not changed in 30, 40 years.
Yeah, it's definitely not far from you at all, Chrissy, or Mike, because I looked it up on the map to see where it was located.
No, actually, you know what's interesting? The couple that was sitting behind me in the theater, when I got up to leave, I heard the guy say to the girl, he's like, hey, on our way home, let's drive by there. And I turned around and I said, was this filmed? This is where I found out it was filmed near us. And he went, oh, yeah, it's, and he gave me the address. He's like, yeah, you want to go drive by that house? Here's the address. You can go ahead. We're going to
do that. You want to hear something really scary? You know what I heard on the way out of my theater?
What?
I heard a guy turn to his girlfriend and go, well, that was a waste of money.
Okay.
Oh, what a loser.
Loser.
I was just, I almost started a fight with the guy. Like, what? Okay. Can we just watch the same movie?
We all need people in this world who, you know, are not that
bright. Well, Eric, there's
somebody needs to flip our burgers. It's okay.
Eric, it only has a 96% rating, so there's 4% of the people that don't like it.
So that was 4%, I guess.
Yeah.
He probably watches Happy Madison movies.
That's awesome, Abe. Abe would say that. That's awesome. All right, so
one thing that bothered me about this film going in was from the trailer was this opening scene, because we already know the story of A Quiet Place if you've seen the commercials, and they establish it, and you have this family walking, and you have the little kid at the back of the end pulls, you know, the toy out of his knapsack, whatever, and hits the button, it makes a whoop noise.
Yeah.
Right.
And the family reacts like, oh shit. And the first thing I thought of is, who the fuck gave this kid that toy? You know, they're doing all this to make sure nobody makes noise, and they're letting the kid carry around his favorite toy with the batteries still in it? I mean, right. Most parents would have yanked the batteries out that on a Christmas morning without the monsters.
That's a good point. Yes.
And yet, you know,
it was false advertising again.
Right. It's they do establish why that happened. Now, we don't understand why that daughter was so fucking stupid, but she doesn't know he puts the batteries in it.
She should have took the batteries and thrown them out or something, and she didn't.
Right, because the kid puts them in. So at least there is a somewhat plausible explanation, because he's a freaking 4-year-old kid. We're only 80-some-odd days into the incident, and we don't even know how, like, if it's 80-odd days, like, is that since civilization fell, or just since the first creature appeared?
Well,
because we don't know how long this kid has been having to deal with this world, and at 4 years old, it's hard to explain to a 4 years old. 4 year old, you can't make spaceship noises.
Just as in It Comes at Night, you don't open the door for bad things. You know, because the 4 year old in that movie opens the door, the dog comes in and gets everybody sick, and they all.
It's not a bad thing. It's a doggy. It's a doggy.
But
it's a boy.
But I'm sure Eric would appreciate this. Kids screw up everything.
Yes, they do. Yes,
well, they do. And I think too, they needed to have that in the opening so that the audience would understand exactly what kind of threat was out there. I think that was the reason for that.
Well, I'll tell you this. Right after that scene, so this is 87 days in, the title card says. Then it says 380 days in the next title card, because we jump into the future. Yeah. Nothing's
actually
changed.
Day 472, so it's like 13 months later.
Right. So
after the kid dies.
So nothing's changed. You know, everything's a problem. But we do find one thing, which is Emily Blunt's character is pregnant, and I'm like, holy shit! Because the first thing I thought of was the story of the Jewish family in World War II, or not family, but a group of Jews that go up into an attic, and there's a couple with a baby as part of them, And the Jewish folk, the older folk, the ones that aren't related to him, they take a vote. 3 days later, they say, we have to smother and kill the baby because the baby makes too much noise and the Nazis are going to find us. And I'm thinking, that's all I'm thinking of is that, oh, my God, what are they going to fucking do? Because she's going to be screaming during the birth because they don't have the tap for the spinal tap. And yeah. And then the baby, there's no fucking way that baby isn't going to attract the monsters. So I'm like, holy shit, they're done. So I really thought they're all
innovative solutions, though.
They did.
That's another thing that's so cool. They create these realistic and believable ways for the characters to move about and live actual lives without making a lot of noise. You know, like, for example, they don't wear shoes. The entire cast throughout the film is barefoot, using flour and soft sand to move about, which was actually brilliant. And you can notice trails leading to wherever they go for how their system of travel works, which is brilliant.
Also, well, I like another thing about this film, too, is that we learn almost immediately, within 10 minutes of the film, that there's other families and survivors out there. Because every night, everybody lights a fire on top of their silo or their roof, and you can see in the distance other families. So they're not necessarily alone, even though we don't meet anybody else. So it's not like, you know, the end of the world where there's only one family and it's just them. So I thought that was cool that we learned that there could be hope if, you know, right off the bat. But anyway, go on, Mike. What were you saying?
Yeah, I don't know how much sense. I mean, they are in upstate New York. I don't know how much sand they get. I mean, that's a lot of fucking sand.
Oh, is it really upstate? It's not really upstate.
Right. I know, but this is what I'm saying. It is a nitpick. I was wondering, because I don't like walking outside barefoot, I was like, you know, they couldn't get slippers or.
Oh, I'll tell you one thing. You can go to Lowe's.
Water shoes or something.
You can go to Lowe's and find as much sand as you fucking want, because when we had our flood here just 2 months ago, that all the stuff was going down my bulkhead, we had to go to Lowe's or a Home Depot, and I bought a bunch of sandbags. So they got I thought that too, but then I remembered what happened to me 2 months ago, and I said there was plenty of sand that would work.
And it just seems like a big risk to be out there laying down all that sand. However, it's possible, since you mentioned there are other survivors, and it's an easy thing to forget because it's not otherwise a plot point in the film.
Right.
That it's possible that all that was laid down
by everybody.
By everybody, which would make some sense.
I just want to go on record with why one small, like, thinking back on the fic, I can look for things to nitpick and find some.
Right.
But the one thing that actually hit me during the movie is that in the basement, there's the dad's workshop, and he's working on it. He's got all his videos, monitors, and he's working on all the hearing aids for his daughter. And there's the whiteboard. And the first time we see the whiteboard is just the camera's panning across the room, and we just kind of see it as part of the scenery. And it says on it, you know, hunt with sound.
Armor.
Armor 3 confirmed in area. And then it has some other stuff. Weakness.
Question mark.
So you see it in passing the first time, and I was cool with that. But then, like, later on, they have this, like, the camera dwells on it, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it.
Murphy's, not Murphy's Law, Chekhov's Gun.
Chekhov's Gun.
And then at the climax of the movie, you just have this shot where the deaf girl just, like, stares intently at this whiteboard for like 30 seconds. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, come on, enough with the whiteboard already. And I was like,
well, and also, I did think, though, that was one of the things I liked about this movie and gave it credit for, was despite that moment you just mentioned, the dramatic irony in this, because the whole audience fucking knows that that's the hearing aid, you know, by like 3/4 of the way through the film. We know it's the hearing aid, that splintering noise that drives the monsters crazy, so we know that that's a weakness. Mm-hmm. But the girl doesn't know. And so for once we're getting a horror film where somebody doesn't go, oh, I figured it out, it's this.
Like, also, I have to
it
say,
it took
Eric,
her a while.
They do set it up so it's not as odd that she stares at the whiteboard, and I'll tell you why. Because for some reason, I still have no idea why, the father refuses to let the daughter in the basement where
yeah,
he does
I didn't
research.
Understand that either.
Yeah, so that was weird, and I have no idea why. So when she's finally down there, everything for her is like amazing, and she's suddenly putting pieces together. Like, oh my God, my father's been not only building all these hearing aids, but doing all this research to try to find a weakness for the monster.
And that by itself would have been fine. I'm just saying, we saw too much of that whiteboard. They were hitting us over the head with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think, probably Phil, he probably had a stack of pornos off to the side, which is why the daughter wasn't allowed down there.
Well, when you got Emily Blunt, you don't need no pornos, believe me. But
so, yeah, well, I don't know. You get used to anything. Yeah, I agree. And also, as someone who has to deal with whiteboards on a daily basis, even when you don't use them, they get dirty. So I thought it was funny how actually immaculately clean and fleshly written everything on there was. You know, I mean, it was just sort of weird. But these are, again, minor things. They need to get the information out there to the audience. It's a quick way to do it. Yeah, they overdid it a little bit.
I was just throwing that out there. It's like the one thing during the movie that bugged me a little bit. That's all.
I think too, another thing shifting a little bit, I really appreciated the kind of the mournful tone of this movie. Like, it made me really sad when the kid was sitting in the car pretending to drive you're like, oh yeah, he's never going to drive a car. Like, there were just some really nice moments in here that where you really felt the loss of these people and like the loss of a world where you see, we all watch a lot of post-apocalyptic things, The Walking Dead and whatever, and you always see abandoned towns and you know, stores full of, you know, whatever, pills and stuff like that. Those are very typical things. I think what this movie did well was give us two or three things that were profoundly sad and, as Abe, as you said earlier, very human.
Actually, Chrissy, I'll say what makes this film great compared to Walking Dead or other apocalyptic films is that we like the people and there are no enemies. The people aren't the evil in the film. They're the good people. The people are the good. And we like these people a lot. Well, like shows, movies like Walking Dead and even The Mist, even though that's a great film, there's characters in it we just hate. And even the people that are the leads have flaws that were like this is a family that's just them and they don't have outside influences or anything like that, so we really can get into liking them a lot. I mean, the daughter was the only one that pissed her off a couple of times because, you know, she's being the typical 13-year-old trying to, you know, rebel against her parents. But all in all, the people were great. I related to them perfectly.
I was going to add that the very fact is too is with the Walking Dead, when a character is killed, it's always mostly for shock value. It's not to advance the story. It's just most of the time to say just try to pull an aim, surprise the audience. But it doesn't really. A lot of times they don't really treat the departure of a character with the weight it needs to have. And here, when a character is gone or sacrifices himself or whatever, it hurts. It hurts. And the fact the cast is so small is also what helps as well.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think I can speak for all of us when I say we all did hate the 4-year-old, right? That was. But with Apocalypse, those are usually stories about which the apocalypse is the backdrop to a story about interpersonal conflict and interpersonal drama. Yeah. So that makes sense, is that. And really, human beings have flaws, and people in this film have flaws. We don't get a whole lot of character development, but this is an issue where the daughter thinks the parents hate her because she killed the 4-year-old, which none of us liked anyway. So,
hey, I have a 4-year-old. I like 4-year-olds.
Your 4-year-old.
just like the Unsane wasn't about all insurance people, it was just about you. But
I was all too obvious. Back to Phil. It's all about Phil.
Yeah, I was very obvious on that one.
So it makes sense for that. That's not the story they're telling here. This is really a lot of ways a film about communication, right? Very obviously, and that unsaid thing that's existed as a cancer over a year between the parents and the child, and the daughter thinks they hate her because they literally can't speak.
Well, and what's amazing is that the way they address it in the movie is fantastic, because the parents don't think about it because she's their daughter. Of course they love her.
Yeah.
You know? But kids don't think like that. And given the circumstances, I could see how she would be carrying that guilt around with her. And I love the scene where they end up at the waterfall.
Oh, that was a great scene.
Oh, yeah.
They're safe and they can actually talk. And the son tells his father, look, you might know you love her and mom might know that she loves her, but you guys gotta tell her that because she thinks you blame her for the death of our other brother and
Bo, and little Bo.
Yeah.
She's gonna snap if you don't give her some relief from the guilt. I mean, of course he doesn't use those words, but that's basically the message he delivers to his dad, and just looking at John Krasinski's face as he realizes, oh, holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another thing that's really great about scenes like that is when people actually talk, it's with meaningful moments. You know, it's not, you know, it's like the ability to speak, to free your voice are in these very important critical moments. We have that at the waterfall, we have that in the basement where the two parents resolve to try to do whatever they can to save their kids. The father screaming to save his children, sacrifice himself. The power, it kind of just shows like a symbolic way the power of one's voice and the meaning of being able to say something to someone.
Now, yeah, this is what I wrote in my review about the family. I wrote, they are the type of loving human beings that I have seen in my own family while growing up, or now with the family I've made. I cared for them, for their safety, for their heartache, and for the stress that I felt myself, which this family on screen has been living through for over a year. A daily struggle to not make noise. Evelyn and Lee trying their damnedest to make sure their children not only are safe, but don't do what children so often do, make a mistake. Since in this case, a simple mistake could kill them all. And I, that's the reason why I was really hooked for the characters, was because, quote unquote, I love these characters. They were people I enjoyed. There was no dirtbags, in other words.
Well, I think it's also, though, we can remember there is a bit of resentment from the dad, or at least it feels like it. Towards the daughter, right? Because he doesn't like let her come on their little sojourn to the waterfall. Maybe that, you know, that whole "I don't want you coming down in the basement" thing. There probably is a little bit of like he sometimes doesn't want to deal with her. Or at least that's how some of it came across to me. And you know, I couldn't kind of,
you know, get that. To me, I didn't think it was that. I thought he was, well, maybe the basement thing, but like on the sojourn thing, that felt more like sexism to me than anything else.
Oh, really? Yeah. I felt it. I felt that when the daughter was being a dink to him, when he gave her the new hearing aid and she wouldn't take it, and she was being just a prick. I was thinking that he just had to get away from the daughter for the day. I didn't think anything.
Oh, that's a good point too.
Yeah,
but it could just as easily be it's fucking teenagers, man. I mean,
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, she was a teenager that was being a dink, and he was like, "Oh my god, I just wanted to get out of here, and I'll take my son with me."
Yeah,
and I think that's what I felt.
Well, anyway, I think it was also due to the fact that the son kind of needed to learn to be able to stand up and survive, because unfortunately, out of the entire group, he was the most fearful and timid of them, and I think he was trying to help them get some survival skills in case anything happens, he'd be able to take care of himself.
Yeah, he was not what you'd call a natural survivor.
No.
Well, but then again, you know, he's only friggin' 8
years
old.
Yeah, but
so.
You know, considering how serious the situation is, it's better to learn as soon as possible than wait until too late.
Well, and see, I actually saw him taking the kid, the younger boy, and not the older girl. I actually saw that as he's got to teach the boy how to fish, because she is a deaf character, and that doesn't mean that she cannot survive, but we do see a moment later in the movie where the monster's behind her and she can't hear it.
Oh, she would have been dead.
The younger boy could learn with his father certain things so that he could take care of his older sister. Mm. That was the way that I read it, in case something happened to
the
parents.
That's true.
Just because she was impaired. I think if she had not been hearing impaired, I think that probably the girl and the boy would have both gone so they could both learn the skill. I think the boy has to learn so that he can go with her, because she wouldn't have survived out there. She can't hear. Right. That's dangerous to her. This isn't about equality or fairness or anything like that.
Right.
It's about survival, mm-hmm. which is what I think this movie is also about thematically. It's about what facades do we need to let go, and what things do we need to let go in order to survive.
Yeah. Also, Chrissy, I think a good point too is that that was another reason why he was so adamant in trying to get a hearing aid that would work for her, and it wasn't just because, you know, people want to hear, and even if you're just have this disability, maybe you do want to hear anyway. Not saying that if you don't hear at this time, that's not necessarily bad either. But you know, you could assume that this individual wants to hear, so he would want to give her a hearing aid, but he wasn't doing it necessarily for that reason. He was doing it so she could survive, because you need to hear in this world to survive, otherwise you're dead.
Yes,
and
exactly.
I think her guilt, but I think because she feels so powerless and is being kept at the farm so often, that she it transfers over to her belief that her father doesn't love her.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's also, as I'm thinking about it, she's also got a pregnant wife at home, she's got a pregnant mom at home. Probably can't, very pregnant, you obviously can't really leave her home alone.
Right, and the boy definitely is useless, so
yeah.
The daughter would be the perfect choice to stay home to help the mother if something happened. And as we know, the mother was going to go within any day.
Right, and by the way, speaking of nitpicking, there are legitimate nitpicks, and then there's people being dumbasses. Or I have seen people say, man, why did they decide to have another baby?
It sometimes just happens. That's why there's a lot of...
yeah. I'm going on a limb and saying maybe she wasn't able to get the birth control and the cable is out, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he just didn't get the pull out in time.
Things do happen. Yeah, now I'm guessing because they can't make a lot of noise, maybe she didn't enjoy it that much, but...
Well, they got the safe room that they probably...
Yeah, and I'm sure that, yeah, they're trying to figure something out. But, yeah, I mean, we are only, like, a little over a year, like a year and 3 months or so out from when this happened, 400-some-odd days. And, you know, maybe they don't know that the world isn't coming back, you know, that we don't want to, you know, punch mom in the stomach or have her accidentally fall down the stairs to trigger her.
Oh, Lord.
To trigger a
miscarriage. There's the line, you just crossed it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, because they don't want to do something that might accidentally, because maybe things come back, maybe the situation gets resolved. Maybe, you know, maybe they've seen the mist, and they know that, like, as soon as they use the seltzer bottle, that this military is going to come in and save them.
Seltzer bottle. Oh, God.
Can I ask one question? Phil, you had mentioned other survivors before.
Yes.
I think I might have been looking at my notebook, but so somebody correct me if I didn't see the right thing or if I'm confused, because I'm really not sure. So I wrote it down as a question. When he goes up on top of the corn thing and lights a torch.
Yeah, the silo.
Were there other torches that were lit in the valley?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I'm not like a Lord of the Rings type
and
thing.
And that was the other survivor. So every night.
Okay.
The survivors would light a fire to let others know that they're still there.
That they're still there. Okay. I thought so. I wasn't sure if it was, if that was what I was seeing, or if it was like a far away shot of their torches. I was confused
for a second.
But
you know what, Chrissy, and that's what's kind of cool about this film is that, obviously someone could miss it, like you may have possibly missed it, but most of us who didn't miss it understood exactly what was going on, and there was no exposition at all. They didn't have to tell us what was going on.
That's what I was saying earlier about the imagery, Phil. They tell you so much in here with just a single image here and there that it's awesome. Like, I'm totally on your page with you. Yeah.
Well, but it's also the sort of thing that if you missed it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't affect the film. But audiences like thinking that they're smart. They like thinking that they're not being talked down to by having the same whiteboard shown to you every 30 seconds.
Right.
Right. So it's weird. So on something like that, you can compliment the audience by throwing in a little detail like that, and the audience will go, oh, I know what that means.
Yeah.
I'm smarty. I can figure that out.
Well, you know what I love, too? I love the little detail of when I felt like I was a smarty when they were walking in the farmhouse and I saw the boards that were painted that you couldn't step on because they...
Yeah.
Oh, right, right.
Oh, I didn't see that.
That was a good one.
Cool. I saw the footsteps laid out, but yeah.
Yeah, don't step on this board because that one will squeak. Yeah.
Right, but again, now that's something that if you miss it, who cares? The thing that's actually kind of plot important for you, which is these things are bulletproof and there are three of them in the area, that they lay out like you're a freaking moron and they shout in your face. But that at least is plot important. All those other details, it's who cares if you don't get it because it's something you can pick up on a rewatch or, you know, you'll have to ask your grandma to explain it to you, you know, whatever it is, but you can pick that up later, you know. But audiences don't like being talked down to, and audiences tend to know when they're being talked down to. Now, there was, at the end, and we'll get to it at the end, where someone didn't get what happened with the monster, and I heard him complaining about it on the way out. And I was like,
what is there not to get? I don't get what this idiot doesn't get.
Well, we're in spoiler territory here, right? So, at the end, when they shoot the monster... Yeah. And like, oh, you could have just shot them all along. It's like, no, they had armor plates that they showed the armor plates being lifted. Have you never played a video game before?
Wait for the boss to open its weak spot.
It opened its weak spot. It was flashing red. Shoot me. Right. And that was the thing.
Right, and then you have to run away while it shoots fireballs at you three of them. And then when it stops, it opens up again, and you go run over and you shoot it with the...
And you have to do it three times.
Yeah.
Three, not four, not two. Three is the times that thou shalt shoot it.
Yeah. Well, right. I actually really liked how they developed that whole sequence with the hearing aid. And then the creature hunting with the sound and opening up whatever that is to release the sonic whatever. But I thought that was all very, very well done and clever as far as giving a reason for why it would expose a weak spot. I thought it was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I also appreciated that they... as far as the creature design, they didn't really... I was reading about this, too, and how they had tried all these different types of creatures and blah, blah. They wanted just the right creature for this, and I guess they came up with several, like, lots and lots of concepts. Ooh, pardon me, that eventually they were just like, no, 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 and then they settled on this. I kind of appreciated the idea that they just went with something that made sense.
Yeah.
Like, the beast echolocated because it was blind, so it made a clicking sound, so it echolocated, but they didn't really care about making it so amazingly innovative and complicated and, you know, different from everything you've ever seen. They just went with something that made sense.
It was very grounded.
It was very practical, and I thought that was super cool.
The creatures, in a way, feel like they could actually exist.
And yeah, because they were so simple, I think.
And while I was watching the movie, it seemed to me that there was at least a vague similarity between these and the monster from Cloverfield.
Yes.
Just because the little flappy things it had on the side of its head. And then after that, I got out of the movie, I started reading some reviews, and I came across an article saying that they actually talked to people at Bad Robot at one point because this was shot when 10 Cloverfield Lane was in production.
Huh.
And they discussed the possibility of that being a Cloverfield movie. And quite frankly, I think it would have been a better entry than Cloverfield Paradox.
Oh, my God.
But I thought it was funny that it didn't end up being part of the Cloverfield universe. That I had that ping in my brain when I saw that creature. I was like, oh, this guy kind of like got the flappy things on the side of his head, kind of like the Cloverfield monster.
Right. I don't think it would have been a problem because at least until Paradox, there wasn't an overt connection between the Cloverfield stories. They're just an anthology series of science fiction horror films. So I think it could have worked just fine with that and not ruined it unless they forced a connection the way they did with Cloverfield Paradox.
Right.
Well, thank God it wasn't Cloverfield after that disaster with Paradox. No.
Well,
and to be honest, this film was strong enough. It doesn't have to be part of a series, you know.
I know, but I understand. But I also understand the concern because, again,
how do you bring people in besides Emily Blunt? How do you?
And I don't even know. I mean, and really, does Emily Blunt even bring people in? I mean,
hell yeah.
No, not you, Bill, people.
You're a strange, perverted little man.
No, I just like following certain.
Oh, you're right. You're not little.
I like certain actors and actresses.
Well, and I also, did anybody else feel this too? I would say the same thing
about Scorsese. Hell yeah, I'm going to go.
But people will go see Scorsese films, or at least they used to. I don't know if they're
still. Dude, there's a reason Blunt makes $15 million a picture.
Really? How did her movie with Tom Cruise do?
It did excellent after it went to video.
After it went to video, right? But they're trying to get people into theaters, right? So I don't know that she's a big enough box office draw that they would want to gamble that.
But Jennifer Lawrence and George Clooney don't bring anybody in either. They're making $15 million a year.
Yeah, I'm not saying, but you're talking about Hollywood producers. They don't always make sense in terms of what they pay people. And she's also sleeping with the director, so who knows. But I'm guessing that's how she got pregnant.
Well, did anybody else think that this movie in general reminded me of the last like half hour or so of M. Night's Signs?
A little bit.
Atmospherically.
I can see where you're going.
You mean the scene in the basement?
I didn't feel that.
It was kind of, I don't know. It was just the way the atmosphere was set up. It's not a criticism of the film or anything. It was just, it kind of reminded me of it, and I liked that. It made me feel like I was kind of in familiar territory with the cornfield and the farmhouse.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Let me ask you this. What I had four ideas. The monster was either a government experiment that went wrong, Satan's spawn coming to Earth to kill everybody, aliens, or Cthulhu outer dimension type beast. What was it? We don't ever find out, right?
Aliens the whole time.
I was thinking it could possibly be a military experiment after we've been discussing this, but go on ahead.
There's actually a little newspaper clip talking about a meteor that actually landed.
Oh, in the film?
Yeah.
Really?
I
missed that.
I remember.
Yeah, it's on the wall. It's on the wall in his basement down there. And that's part of what I was talking about sticking these little details of backstory in there, that if you look at them enough, you get the whole thing. Like, I'm pretty sure that if we rent the movie, when we buy the movie, I'm going to buy this, when we buy the movie on Blu-ray, I'm going to sit there and freeze frame that thing where his whiteboard was, because there were articles all over the place, and I'm pretty sure it's going to tell.
He's going to be taking those confirmed.
I don't want to spoil anything, but I did some online research, and the real origin of the monsters is that they were created by a writer doing a screenplay.
Lame joke.
Yeah. That's really what it is. It doesn't matter where they came from,
and then that's what leads to a quieter place,
the prequel.
But this is what us nerds talk about. We want it. We dissect it to the point of stupidity.
Sometimes it's not worth it.
Actually, it's part of the genius of this movie is that they don't get into that.
No.
Because, like you said earlier, it's a nice, tight 95-minute movie. You don't want to deal with any of that BS.
No.
It's just a waste of time, and it really doesn't matter in the long run as far as the telling of this particular story. So it doesn't matter what they are. It doesn't matter where they came from. They're here. They're fast as hell. And they will destroy you in a second if you make a noise, and that's what you need to know.
Yeah. And they hate raccoons.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I was, and again, this is nitpicking, I get that, but how much noise is noise, right? Because are these things running around taking out every leaf that rustles? There are no birds singing, I don't think, any point in the film, so they're apparently taking out the birds.
No, but I did like the you can still nitpick it, and there are inconsistencies in the movie, for sure. But I did like the scene by the river where John Krasinski kind of explains that at least a little bit in yeah. that they try and detect sounds that are out of ordinary for the ambient level of noise.
Right. So just saying, I'm just curious how, like, obviously I get the point that when your life is at stake and you know that these things hunt by noise, that you don't even want to break wind. I get that. So I understand, but I'm just curious if they even thought about it in creating it, or if they didn't care, if they thought about how much noise would you really need to draw these things, how far away do they have to be?
And quite frankly, in the scene where Emily Blunt's given birth and has the baby in the water, I think the amount of noise that baby was making would have been enough for them to be toast.
Yeah.
I thought that stretched credibility a little bit in that scene, but again, it's a nitpick.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and that was another thing. By the time we got to the scene with the water coming in the basement, I was like, when I said my nerves were shot. I was like, oh my God, how much worse can it get for these people? It's just one thing after another. But that was one of the things that I think made this movie so genius, was, like you had said earlier, Eric, the ratcheting of the tension, the upping of the stakes. I don't think I have ever seen a horror movie up the stakes as well as this thing has, at least in my recent recollection. I haven't.
What's really nice, too, is that it's an isolated incident. It's not like they completely stopped the invasion or something like that. It's not like in, you know, Mars Attacks, where they figure out Yodeling will save the world. Or will they?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, the movie leaves you with hope. You know, it leaves you with a very strange sense of hope that this family is going to move forward and that they're at least going to kill the three that are in their immediate area.
Yeah.
Well, and I gotta say, that level, the last shot of the movie was
It's fabulous.
Brilliant.
Yeah, well, it's good. I love it. I had to expect you to say some cheesy tagline, but the shotgun spoke volume.
Yeah, crank the volume, pump the shotgun, cut the credits. Fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And yet they can still save the world. All they have to do is ask Dad how he made that earpiece. Oh, damn it. Maybe not.
But, well, I did like to, I don't know. I just really think this movie was awesome. I have so little to say about it. It was fun. And, you know, I've seen some articles online, too, because after I saw the movie, I was doing research and looking around to see what other people were saying. And I've seen a lot of people, lot of articles and stuff talking about how, well, this is really an intentional commentary on our... Okay, I honestly do not think that these filmmakers are trying to send a message with this movie. I think that you certainly could, because all art is really affected by the environment and the time and wherever in which it's created, right? So even if, like, I'm writing a short story, there's going to be some modicum of this current social condition in which I live in the world at large that kind of affects it, whether I'm aware of it or not. I don't think this movie was a commentary on, you know, our, you know, whatever.
On how Trump should stop tweeting or something.
Yeah, exactly. Because I saw some articles, I'm like, dude, no, you're totally missing the point. Eric is correct. This movie's about communication. If anything, I think this movie is about how scary it is in this day and age to actually speak your mind.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to go that far, then that's what it means. Yeah. It's not about people being silenced. It's about people not being able to say what they
want. Well, that's what I meant about it, how the voice has so much power in this story.
Yeah. I mean, but that's just a guess. I don't think the filmmakers intended to make a point.
Yeah, I don't
No,
either.
But you can find certain little
but
things.
You could find it in there if you wanted to. But I definitely don't think that was it. I think these people were just passionate about telling a
story.
I thought
it was just an awesome story. Yeah.
It was. Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah. I mean, it's such a simple concept, but it's executed so well.
That's the thing I think makes it even better. The story is okay. It's the execution that makes this film awesome.
Right. Like,
yeah.
There's a moment when the kids are under attack, and the dad has to save them by sacrificing himself. And before he makes noise to get the creature's attention, he signs to his deaf daughter that's been having the guilt issues, I love you, I have always loved you. And if you showed that to me on a piece of paper, I'd be like, dude, that's cheesy as fuck. But watching it on the screen the way they did it, it choked me up.
Oh, yeah.
It was sad.
It hit me right in the feels. Also because Lee was such a likable character. He was actually a really...
Oh, he was great.
Character. And so when he sacrificed himself and the way the scene was shot and executed, it really had so much weight.
Yeah. Speaking of the scene right before that, it was an awesome set piece where the kids are in a silo.
A grain silo.
Yeah.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah.
And I did read some stuff that they bought like tons and tons of corn to make that scene. So the local farmers of New York made out big for that film, I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the silo didn't really have it. They actually had to buy the stuff to get it in there. But go on.
And probably my favorite part of that scene is that the little brother falls into the corn and starts sinking into the corn.
Yeah, quicksand.
And the sister is trying to sign to him, stay still, stay still, but he can't see her. So she's trying to help him out, but he can't see her signing, so he's just like sinking further into the corner. I'm just like, oh god,
right?
But he can't see her.
And then he grabs the door that fell down into the silo, and he is okay, but then she starts sinking.
Right.
This is what I'm talking about, where the movie one thing. You don't get a breath because one thing ends and then, oh shit, now she's gonna die. And then, and it's like, oh my god, this is.
And that scene was great too because it shows why it's so important that they look after each other. You know, it was a scene where their strength helped each other.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point too, Abe. Yeah.
And that's why the son had to go learn with his father. That's why it's so important that they stand together because. They by themselves that neither of them could have made it.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, Mike. I was doing some research. Actually, Emily Blunt's last film was A Girl on a Train, and that was a huge moneymaker. Well, not huge, but it made a lot of money. So I just wanted to.
Did it make money because people went to see her?
Probably some way. I mean,
prove it.
I mean, we don't know. I mean, the book was very popular.
Right, that's. I'm thinking it's the title of the book that sold it, not Emily Blunt.
It doesn't matter. Let's move on.
All right, we'll move on. Emily Blunt rules, Eric. I mean, Mike.
I still cannot pick her out of a lineup.
I just don't get it.
There's nothing distinctive about her face.
She's generic pretty.
Yeah, that's it. It's not a criticism of the actress. She's fine. I enjoyed her in the films I have seen her in. But I still even with this movie, if she was standing in front of me with three other blonde ladies, I would have no clue which was the one that was Emily Blunt.
She's not blonde.
Yeah, she's not. What movie have you been watching? What movie is? But I just remember.
Wasn't she blonde in the Tom Cruise movie?
No, she was blonde in Looper, and that was when I first asked everybody about her because I said I had that segue where I said, so what's everybody think of Emily Blunt? Because back then I was already
and even back then we all rolled our eyes.
Oh fuck right. Anyway, all right, what else? Anything else anybody has to say about this? Yeah, Abe.
What I loved was the attention to detail for the creatures. We always kind of talked to them, but what I loved is that they made the creatures, the organs, the detail and stuff like that really cool. The way that the heads split apart and stuff was just really well executed because it felt like, even though it was CGI, it felt like I could see that coming, appearing. I could see that thing, actually exist in a way. And because
And, you know, because sound, as we mentioned, the voice is important, but the power of sound is, you know, it was the most logical choice for their weakness. Because if we know anything with certain sounds, the way hearing works, like dog whistles, for example, those are very powerful to a dog because their hearing is so sensitive. So when you see the creature's muscles and everything pulsate, it felt very organic. It felt very, it didn't feel like over the top crazy, as Christy was mentioning about the design and everything like that.
Now, let me ask you guys this, because even the great reviews for this film, some of the critics just said, well, one of the weak parts was the monster design, because it just felt like the typical alien clone. You know, once Alien came out, anything that's since then, it's just, it's just one of them type of monsters. Did you guys think that's a fair point where, I mean, the monster is just generic looking, or did you guys think it was as awesome as Abe thinks?
Well, I thought it was cool, but it certainly doesn't have the striking profile of, like, this creature from The Ritual.
Right. You know?
Yeah, but I thought it worked for what the story needed, you know? Less is more in this case.
Yeah, I think one of the big things with this movie, as this movie is a fine example of less is more. It's a fine example of simple is better. Simple is cleaner. Simple is. I mean, not saying that complicated cannot be effective. I'm not saying that at all. It just has to be done right. I think in this case, I mean, everybody who worked on this just knew what he was doing. I really, and everything just came together perfectly. I don't think the fabulous creature was the point. I agree with Abe. This movie is really not about the creatures. It's not really about man versus nature, although it kind of is. It is, I guess you could call it man versus nature, but the focus is not on the creature. We need to know two things about the creature, and that is it hunts by sound and it eats people. That's really all we need to know. We don't need to know about its biology and its whatever and how massive it is. So, I mean, I think it was the perfect creature. Like Abe said, it was just what this movie needed.
We do find out that this they don't they eat everything, because earlier in the film there was an opossum that was living in the house and it was making noise and it jumped off the house. And when it started walking away and squeaking, the monster went after that instead of them and killed
them. Right, the raccoon?
Oh, was it a raccoon?
I thought it was a raccoon.
Thank you, Phil. Okay. I thought it was a possum, too.
I think it was a possum. I'm with
you. No, it was a raccoon.
Yeah.
There were like two of them walking through the corn maze?
There were two raccoons.
Does not matter.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. This could completely change the meaning of the film.
we will rewatch this.
Is this placental or marsupial?
We will find out one day, Mike. We will find out one day.
There are a couple other things I want to mention before we wrap things up. One is we haven't talked about the birth scene yet. Holy shit.
This is why Emily Blunt is a great actress.
I never said she wasn't a great actress, by the way, Phil. I do think she is.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's more Mike, that's I'm complaining to.
But
I never said she's not a great actress, Phil. I actually distinctly said the opposite. I have enjoyed her performances. Right. I just find her nondescript.
All right.
There's a scene in this movie where she is about to give birth to her baby when the creature shows up in her house.
Oh my god, that scene was terrifying.
Talk about crapping your pants during a scene. Holy shit.
Oh, and then they have the thing where when there's something wrong, they have these lights throughout the.
That was cool.
And they turn them. They press a button and they turn red. So when people return to the house, they know. Oh my God, there's something wrong.
When she did. Okay, well, first of all, I'm sure that when she was bringing the laundry upstairs, and she pulled that nail up all the stairs. I'm sure we all thought the same thing. So I'm going to count the same three, and we're all going to say it at the same time. 1, 2. 3, Chekhov's nail.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt that when she stepped on it. I was like, oh!
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my toes literally curled in my... They kept on
leaving it there to trick us because we think someone else is going to step on it or the monster's going to step on it and all this other, and no one ever steps on it again, even though they keep on showing it throughout the movie. It's kind
of
funny.
It's one of the things that's great about this movie is that they set things up and they pay off. They set it up and they pay it off.
Yeah.
And they I don't think they set up anything in this movie that they didn't end up paying off.
No. And I've got chronic foot pain, and so when I see a foot pain thing on, it's like it really made me uncomfortable in the theater.
Oh my! I have to admit, I looked at the floor, shut my eyes, or covered my eyes with my hands at least I don't know how many times. And this was one of the scenes I had to look at the floor because I couldn't see it. And then it's like, oh! And everybody in the audience goes, oh! And I go, I knew it! I'm glad I didn't see it.
Well, I will say that I think it may have taken a little more time to give birth. I don't know. I've never done it myself. I think that happened. Maybe
it's pretty easy, Eric. I've done it a couple of times.
Technically, this is her fourth kid, and they say each one after is much quicker. But
that was 15 minutes.
Yeah, but you know what?
We don't know that because we keep on going back and forth between the son, the daughter, and her. And
yeah, that's
we don't know how, by the time they get home, it's nighttime, but the time it happens, it was still daylight when she first breaks her water.
Oh, okay. That's a fair point.
It could have been. That's kind of the way I looked at it. I was sort of thinking, we don't really know exactly how much time passed. We're not quite sure. It could have been several hours. Right. And, I mean, there are births on record that are only a couple of hours. That is out there. That can happen. It is possible. So I was just like, all right, you know, sometimes there are women that give birth in, you know, under a couple of hours, believe it or not. That's out there. So
And I'm willing to give credit even on the...
Later, you know? Go ahead, what?
I was going to say, I'm even willing to give credit on the relative lack of screaming in giving birth.
Oh my God, I couldn't even deal with that. That was awesome.
Well, because I don't know that anyone here has ever actually had to give birth while noise-seeking monsters are outside waiting to kill you. All right, or for that matter, stepped on a nail. So clearly, you know, she has willpower.
They've trained themselves.
And yeah, we can. I mean, I know my wife had to get an injection to get a bone spur removed a couple of years ago.
Hmm.
And that hurts a lot.
Sure.
And when she got injected and she screamed and she said something, and then when she walked out, the nurse said, "You're a school teacher, aren't you?" Because what she screamed when she got injected was clearly G-rated.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, good point.
And so sometimes, now obviously she still screamed. I don't think the monsters only got drawn to swear words or something, but you know, maybe you can. I don't know. I've never been in that circumstance.
I'm sure it's probably legit. If you know you're going to die, you just go, you know, rather than scream or make noise or anything. I have to say they did, even though there was one or two jump scares they intentionally put in this film, and one of them was when she was in the bathtub.
Was a little lame.
I jumped, though. I did an Abe spinny at Annabelle Creation. I went, and my popcorn went flying, so.
But speaking of noise, that old bastard in the woods, what a dick.
Oh, no, actually.
He snapped. His wife just.
I think he snapped, yeah, because you saw the dead wife at first. Like, when I had seen him in the trailers, I thought, oh, no, he's like an asshole and whatever. But then when I realized what had happened to the wife and that he basically had snapped and lost his mind, and that's why he screamed. Because it was almost like he didn't recognize. If you watch that moment really closely, it was almost like he was oblivious to the fact that the guy and the boy were there.
Right.
He was almost oblivious to them. He was just like a knot, like you'd see on the side of the road. So that, I know, it seemed like he was a real asshole, but I don't think he was. I think
because here's a guy that survived for over 400 plus days, so he must have just snapped right then.
Yeah.
Well, also, they hunt by sound. The creature's not going to come into the area and go, oh, I see you. Right? They're going to come to him. So as long as they don't make any noise, It shouldn't harm them.
That's true.
That's actually a good point. They could have actually just kind of slowly moved away and not worry. That's a good point.
Mm. Yep, exactly.
Which is what they did, essentially.
Yeah. Which is exactly what they did, yeah.
Right.
But the way they acted, I was like, the moment he makes a sound, they're screwed too. That's what the way the scene kind of felt maybe a little off to me when I...
Right. Because as long as because they don't smell and they don't see. So, no. Yeah. So it was specifically as long as they're not where the guy was standing when he screamed, no one else was going to get killed.
Well, and I think I've talked about just about everything I want to hit. I just want to mention we already kind of talked about what the last shot of the movie is. But I thought it was kind of cool that at the end of the movie, it's the women who are kicking ass. And the boy is cowering behind the water heater with the baby.
Yeah, he's holding the baby. Yeah.
That was I thought that was fun.
Eric is the part of the Me Too.
Yes, hashtag Me Too.
That's right.
Eric Webster, social justice warrior.
according to Philip.
Right. I just messed it up. But Blunt with the shotgun was awesome. But hey, you got to remember, she kicked ass in Edge of Tomorrow, my friend, and Looper.
Oh my God, would you stop?
Sorry. Take your hands out of your pants.
Hey.
I think that was perfect.
Thank you for that visual image that I really didn't need right now, Abe, but that's okay.
Abe, that was not right.
Oh, come on.
It was awesome.
All right. Anything else anybody want to bring up about this film?
Yeah, it's fucking fantastic.
All right, so we'll go into our final thoughts of the film. We'll start with you, Chrissy.
Well, I don't know. I raved about this film so much at the beginning when we started, so I'm just going to stick to my original guns and say I think this is probably going to be my number one film of the year. I'm pretty sure that it is. It would take something pretty amazing to knock it off its pedestal. And even though I am absolutely cannot wait for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom because it has dinosaurs and volcanoes, I highly doubt that that is going to be anywhere near as good as this. Everybody needs to go see this. Just go see it. It's awesome. And even if you're not... one more caveat, too. I've already convinced a lot of people who don't like horror films to go see it. And they're coming out and going, oh, my God, this is awesome. So it's not even necessarily really only for horror fans. I think somebody who is kind of your on the fence, you know, maybe likes a little bit of tension, but doesn't, I think, would do well with this. It's got, I think this movie has a little something for everyone.
I disagree. If you're scared of horror films and don't like them, this ain't the film to start.
Oh no, I disagree completely. I say to my couple friends who were afraid was, well, have you seen Alien? They go, yeah. I said, okay, well then that's about as scary as it's going to get. You're going to see the alien, and you're going to see it up front. And they go, oh,
All right, that's fair.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's not really like horror, like ghosts or demons or murders or. I mean, it's. It's kind of on that edge between horror and sci-fi where I think that if people who aren't really crazy about horror go to see it, as long as you tell them up front what it is, I think they could still enjoy it too.
Well, and it depends on what...
It's really what it is. Go ahead.
It depends on what... No, let's not get into this. Is it really horror? It all depends on what you consider scary to be. Some people, when they hear horror, they think of like mutilation and gore...
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And
when I think of horror, I feel
this
like...
This is a lot of tension.
Covering my eyes like I did in this film.
That's what this is. This is scary, but it's not gory, and it's not gross, and it's not like torture porn or anything like that. So,
right.
Not that you can't enjoy those films, but just this is not that film. Which is why I see some people, it's not that scary. It's not a scary film. It's a tense film.
I need to see the mutilations and the intestines being pulled out. And that's
horror.
See, to me, that's not horror. That's just unnecessary gross. And I don't understand why anybody would want to watch that. But whatever.
I don't even say it's unnecessary, but I do get confused over people who think that gore equates to horror.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right. There's many versions of horror and so forth. So, Abe, okay. your final thoughts.
I really enjoyed this movie. I thought this was fantastic. I mean, I mean this went beyond my expectations. It's not a perfect film. Yes, I agree you can take the hell out of it, but fuck, why would you want to do that? That takes away a lot of the fun. And this movie is, well, intense, very fun because it is just so well put together. There was so much care put into each part to making the world believable. The characters really likable, relatable, and you care about the struggle. The creatures serve their purpose. They're not like going to win any awards in design, but they execute their roles in the story perfectly. And it does really allow you to kind of get pieces of the story and little clues without showing them your face. Go see this film, have a good time, and, well, hold on to your butts.
All right. For me, this film is absolutely awesome. This is a great horror film. I felt really scared when I watched Autopsy of Jane Doe and It Follows, and those films are classics in my opinion. And this film is as good as them and is actually more tense in my opinion than them because, again, there's no breathing. Or moments of, you know, beats that you can take a breath. I would highly recommend this film. If you love horror films, this is the film to see. It's really scary. Obviously, as folks have just mentioned, it doesn't have gore and violence like that. So if you're going in looking for a slasher-type film, obviously this isn't your film. But if you just like all horror films, as most of our co-hosts and I do, no matter what subgenre it is, this is a great film for horror fans, and people should go see it. And Emily Blunt rules. Eric?
This is a great movie. We've already said so much about it. I'm not going to get into specifics, but it is my number one movie of the year so far. I'll be surprised if something knocks it out of that spike before the end of the year. Go see it in theaters. Support this movie. We want more like it.
Mike?
I'm not sure if I would say great. It is a really good film.
Boo hiss.
I didn't say anything during yours, Phil.
Fair enough, Mike. Fair enough.
I don't know if I would say great. I'd say it's a really good film. It is a simple concept. I used the word gimmick earlier. I don't mean that certainly in a negative way. It's just a great, simple idea to pitch a film around. I don't know what to expect from this director in the future because his other two films, which I have not seen, were not, you know, successful films and they don't have good reviews. So maybe he just got lucky and struck on a great idea. Maybe he learned something either before making this film or while making this film. But certainly this is going to open up doors for him. But it really exploits the concept well. Yes, you can nitpick it. Yeah, you can over-scrutinize it. But that's kind of kill the fun of the idea. You know what the concept is, buy it and go into the film and expecting them to pay off on that and don't worry about the other little details. And really see it in theaters because I cannot imagine this having the same effect at home.
I'm still buying it regardless.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. One other thing I forgot to mention about the film, the other screenwriters besides Krasinski should be noted, obviously, because they're as equal on screenwriting as he. Brian Woods and Scott Beck, and both of them do have entries in Wikipedia where they've done other things, and maybe there are some people to watch going forward as well. But it appears Scott Beck and Brian Woods co-write a lot of stuff together. And so maybe Krasinski is now part of their team, or he just liked their stuff. All right, so that's it. Quiet Place, still at the theaters. We'll probably be there for a while because this is a big hit. This is another horror film, like all the ones that came out last year, that has become a monster at the box office, or if not a monster, at least highly successful at the box office. So it'll be there for a bit.
Yeah, I have a feeling this is going to completely take the wind out of what's the movie coming out?
Truth or Dare.
Truth or Dare. Because if you're going to go see a horror film this weekend, unless you've already seen A Quiet Place, you're likely to go see A Quiet Place and not Truth or Dare. This just ended up being bad timing on their part. And I'm not criticizing Truth or Dare. I haven't seen it. It certainly hasn't had the same marketing campaign behind it.
It is supposed to make 10 to 13 million, which would make it five times more than it cost, though, is what they're saying.
Yeah, it's also, but we'll see. I mean, I don't think this is going to beat it out this weekend. And
it
may drop to second with Rampage, and you don't really have, Infinity Wars in, I think, 3 weeks. Two or three weeks. That'll suck, you know, all the oxygen out of the room. But
what
it's
is Infinity Wars? Is that the Avengers film?
That's the next Avengers film. So you know, then you're going to get, that gives it about a 3 week window that it can really suck up some money for the, and it may end up in sort of like that Split Get Out territory. So that'll be good. It's another really big horror hit to go with it. Split Get Out.
Yep. And as was stated on Friday the 13th, Truth or Dare and Rampage, two more genre films are coming out at theaters. So genre cinema is looking pretty good right now. All right. So that's it. Quiet Place. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Listen to us talk about The Quiet Place, or A Quiet Place, rather. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.